Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium. And everywhere else at 8 p.m.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
This is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my new friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
You hit our son!
Happy birthday, Polly.
Oh, no, I got me some. Well, I'm the Joker, baby.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 204. I almost said 2004. God, that'd be way too many podcasts. Episode 204, Jeff Lowe, Ken Jectrow, Ballins. Jam-packed episode, looking at the decade of this episode. We're going to be ranking our top five most overrated movies, in our opinion, because let's just piss some people off today, I guess. And then we're going to be reviewing two movies that people have been wanting to hear us talk about for a while, The Lighthouse and Jojo Rabbit, two of the most talked about movies in terms of, you know, being good movies in 2019. So excited to do that. The return of Sonic the Hedgehog, that trailer, the redesign officially put into back. The world. So we'll give our takes there. We'll get to all that, though. And let me just say, I'll plug our little YouTube channel. The Mandalorian debuted, and we've been watching Watchmen. Subscribe to our YouTube channel below. We will not be doing long reviews on the pod. It's going to be videos. You can find them there. Myself, Ken Jack, Robbie Fox. We do a breakdown, Easter eggs, theories. We try to answer some questions that you, the listeners, the viewers, the audience has. So click our YouTube link in the description. You can subscribe there. We have one out for Mandalorian already. And another one out for Watchmen. All Watchmen ones come out the day after. Mandalorian come out the day of. So do that. We'll touch on Mandalorian a little bit here, but our lengthy reviews will be on video because, you know, the world pivoted to video.
YouTubers.
Yeah. I got Disney Plus yesterday. And you know what the first thing I did was?
What'd you watch?
You guys probably went and watched The Mandalorian.
I know what you're about to say. I just want you to
say
it.
I have a feeling.
Went straight to Pixar in real life.
That's you gave us a review really late last night.
Yeah, and let me tell you, it sucks. They only posted one episode, but the episode was 5 minutes, and it kind of was exactly what we thought it was. It's just designed to be clippable. So what it was a control panel from Inside Out, and people in what's the park with the arch in New York City, Washington Square. Is that it?
Yeah.
Sure.
Is that the one?
Square Park.
It's the one that I know if I see that
the
arch.
NYU one.
Yeah, if I see that arch,
Union
I know Square. It's probably late and I'm going out.
Or nope, Washington Square Park.
That's
Union
like
Square Park. Nope.
That's the like if you ever want to like do some characterization in the movies and you got smart characters, you always put them in that park.
Yeah.
Because if it's any other park, you're just like, okay, they're not in the one with the arch. That's the smart one where people play chess, right?
People play chess in most of the parks, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
We'll call that one the chess park.
Yeah. Last time I went to New York City, the Killers had just released Hot Fuss, so it's been a while, fellas.
Quite some time.
Pixar in real life, they had people come up to the control panel. They dicked around with the buttons quite a bit, and they had improv actors reacting to the button presses. So they would press one, and they'd be like, "I'm gonna press the mad button," and then they'd be like, "I want to eat a bunch of food." And like, it was, they posted cringe.
Damn. That's so cool.
Anyway, but then I watched then I watched Mando, which I'm calling The Mandalorian.
I'm not throwing pigs for the, why was that the one they started with?
I don't know why they're, I don't know why they're doing it. There's some real weird stuff on there. I went into the Star Wars page and they have this thing called Star Wars Blips. Did you see that one?
I didn't see that yet. No,
They're like 30-second animated shorts of BB-8 and R2-D2 breakdancing.
Did you watch Float? The first short from the new series of shorts?
No, I can't say that I did, my friend. I watched...
Shenat, pal.
Yeah, Shenat. I watched Pixar in real life, and then I watched
Campbell Walker.
Can't keep that up.
He's tremendous.
I think this bit's dead. Blips looks like a cartoon of droids. You're right. These are 30 second cartoons.
What's the do they just need to pad the numbers for amount of original content on there? Or some of these things I just don't get. I mean, look, I'm not complaining. There's a bunch of stuff on there. The amount, like, I'm going to hand up. I didn't truly pay attention to everything that was in this vast service of programs.
How dare
you. Until ESPN basically told me I should download it on Monday night during the football game, which was insane. And apparently they did it on Twitter too.
Oh yeah. Stephen A was all over it.
Yeah. And, there's a lot of stuff that there's a lot of stuff from the vault, man. Aristocats, that shit's on there. So I'm excited. Yeah, I'm excited.
We're going to talk about how many people downloaded it, but you want to know the one thing that I think people have been uncovering the most? Gargoyles.
Oh, yeah.
Gargoyles has been something that people were like, oh, shit, I forgot about this. We talk about it on the radio show we have on Sirius, Big If True, because Tyler, Lightscamer Barstool Hall of Famer, has a cartoons trivia category, and I've asked plenty of gargoyle questions. So like that had been on my mind because of that, but I've seen a lot of people say like, oh shit, I just watched 20 episodes of Gargoyles last night. I just got Disney Plus. So that was, I think, one of the ones that caught people's eye.
I never liked Gargoyles.
I never watched it.
You're too young.
I've seen like the pictures of the cartoon and stuff, and I was just like, I don't know if this is for me.
Yeah, it was okay.
I think you would probably have enjoyed it. And now I don't. I would say maybe not. I don't know, though, because there's no nostalgia for you there. My connection,
canceled.
I had a Burger King toy, and you would press this side button, and it would spin the gargoyle, and it would shoot sparks.
Oh, that sounds vaguely familiar. Why is that so? Those maybe were, I think you might have talked about it before.
You press the gargoyle.
I think I have talked about it.
The gargoyle will take a screenshot.
They sound fun.
Oh, Jeff, did you smash that order for the new 16-inch MacBook Pro today?
No, but you just continued to send us a group chat today. It just kept saying MacBook Pro, baby. And then I said, what? And you didn't reply. And then 3 hours later, you said MacBook Pro, baby.
You don't remember that Jeb Bush sound clip?
I don't, no.
Or it was, yeah, it was when he was on the campaign trail and he was doing a Q&A. And somebody was like, well, what technology tools do you like? And he's like, listening, and he's like, I got an iPhone. I got a MacBook Pro, baby. Like, trying to be cool. you had to be there, man. 2016 was wild. I don't know, I did not.
But I got a 4K TV finally with Apple TV 4K
Hell yeah.
in tow, which I didn't know that Disney Plus was going to release everything in 4K, which was kind of a shock.
It's awesome.
So that's kind of why I did that. 4K looks pretty cool. You know what the first movie I got was?
Speed Racer.
Paid money? No, it was not Speed Racer. It was Mission Impossible Fallout.
Okay.
Hell yeah.
Had to support had to turn off the motion smoothing.
That's what
first thing
say.
I did.
Pro, baby.
I like just go to the most obvious thought in my head, and that was motion smoothing.
Yep.
Hello, I'm Tom Cruise.
Anything else? We have a lot to get to. Anything?
I have a bad feeling about Jedi Fallen Order.
Yeah. I told you I have it with every Star Wars game.
I haven't seen any reviews yet.
That's what I'm saying. Even with the semi bad ones.
Will you get it this
bunch
weekend?
Of people hyped up about it.
I don't know. I
already pre ordered, so I don't have a choice.
I'm gonna play it this weekend. I don't have a ton to do, Sunday because the Browns don't play. So I think that's like my commitment Sunday morning. It's like I'm gonna wake up and set aside Call of Duty and play the Star Wars game. Maybe we'll have to give our thoughts on the pod here.
Trust me, we played on fucking baby mode.
Big Star Wars week.
Why wouldn't they? Yeah, if it was good, why would the review embargo be November 14th tomorrow. I guess we'll find out tomorrow.
Trill, when was the first time you ever wore cologne? Do you remember it? You remember buying cologne for the first time?
Yeah, actually, I do. I didn't buy it. I asked for it for Christmas. It was a transitional Christmas where I was transforming from a boy to a man. And I asked my parents for some cool water. Davidoff cool water. I was like 13.
Fuck, well, what's the aqua something one? That's the first one I ever got.
Aquafit?
Yeah.
No, that's a drink.
Aqua Velvet. I was going to say Aquafina is a drink. It's Aqua Velvet, right?
Yeah.
That's the first one I got, and it smelled terrible.
The holy trinity of tween cologne is...
Old Spice?
Cool. No. Maybe now. But when I was a kid, it was Cool Water, Jupe, and Michael Jordan cologne.
Jupe? What is that?
You've never smelled Jupe?
No. J-U-P-E?
No, J-O-O-P. J-O-O-P.
That's all.
It's even dumber.
What you're getting at, Trill, is that all of that was garbage, right?
Yeah, I mean, first off.
Oh, my God, this is so stupid.
Yes, but Ken Jack, what he's getting at here is that it was all garbage, right? Fact.
And you know what isn't garbage? The cologne that we got from Hawthorne, which smells amazing, actually.
Smelling good, super fucking important. You really don't... Anything worse than smelling, like smelling bad or knowing someone that smells bad, you don't want that. Hawthorne smells really good. It smells great. And it's very easy. So we got set up with this thing, Hawthorne. We took this quiz, right? Asked you your height, I think. Did it ask us our height or am I making
it? It asked basic stuff about like your general hygiene and shit. And it's like, for me, it's like, hey, is your hair thick or thinning? And I'm like, yeah, man, it's thinning. That's just the truth. I'm not going to lie on this quiz. I have no reason to be ashamed. And they gave me shampoo and conditioner that helps thicken up your hair.
How many full cloves of garlic do you eat
per day?
It asks you a lot of questions about the type of cologne you use. Like I have a cologne that was discontinued and it was still on the list. So they match you up with all these things.
Mine. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, so it's perfect. It matches you up with the type of things that you would like, but it gives you even better stuff in this nice box. You have deodorant. Like what type of deodorant? Do you want it like dry? I don't know different types of deodorant, but yes.
No, but I can stop going to the perfume store next to Auntie Anne's in the mall.
Yes. Now you can just go get the pretzel and not pretend that you're buying perfume. Like, I'm here anyway. May as well get two pretzels or think of pretzel sticks.
Do you have a knockoff of Gucci Guilty?
What?
And isn't that a cologne? It's not Hawthorne, though, so I don't wear it.
No. They sent us two colognes, one for like work, one for play. They gave us a bar of soap, body wash, shampoo, conditioner. Mm-hmm.
This is my Dave and Buster's cologne.
They asked us that too. It's like, what's your cologne? And like, they had a lot of weird colognes on the list, which I guess people do use. And the one that they sent though, it smells absolutely amazing.
All these fucking deodorant options. So just take this quick quiz. You got to go to Hawthorne, Hawthorne.com or excuse me, .co. Hawthorne, Hawthorne.co. And use our code LIGHTS to get 10% off your first purchase. Great box. And it's a lot of shit in there, too. That bar of soap might last me 5 years.
So much stuff.
It's the biggest bar of soap I've ever seen in my life.
King's, I got a big ass thing of body wash.
King shit.
2020 is the year we're smelling nice.
We be smelling good.
For ourselves. Get yourself a removable shower handle.
Mm-hmm. And just clean that crack out.
Clean everything up. And then after you get out of the shower, just put some on your wrist. Just dab it on. Get that body internal chemistry working along with a customized fragrance.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing better.
Yeah, Hawthorne, that's king stuff. Hawthorne.co, C-O. The code there is going to be LIGHTS, L-I-G-H-T-S. All right, thanks to Hawthorne. Great product. Smelling nice right now. Damn, Sonic. Bro,
you smell good as hell.
Chilling with the homies, just sniffing each other.
Sonic the Hedgehog is back.
Glow up.
He got a glow up. Everyone hated the way he looked in the first trailer. In an unprecedented move, the director said, hold the phone, we're kidding. This ain't it, Chief himself. They remade it, and here we go. This new Sonic, everyone fucking loves it.
Okay, right off the bat, what do you think about the conspiracy that this whole thing was intentional?
To get more attention?
I actually don't think that it's true, but I want to think that it's true because it's fucking genius if so.
I don't think it's true because that would be a lot of work.
That's probably the better explanation.
That would be a lot of duplicative effort. Mm.
I feel like where I kind of fall on this is that, like, it's cool that a director listened to feedback from people, right? Because they, like, usually Hollywood people, they don't give a shit. They'll just throw out the slop and they don't care. And so I think that's cool. I do also think it sets a bad precedent because we as audience members are usually just kind of dumb as shit and don't really know what we want. And also, I still don't think this is going to be a good movie. And now it's still going to be a bad movie and be over budget, so doubly bad. But it got scored some free internet points on social media, which means a lot in real life, as we know.
I also will say this, is that this is an interesting comparison to something like The Lion King. Remember what people said about The Lion King? They're like, it looks really real, but it doesn't, like, that doesn't mean it's good, right? Like, it looked realistic as fuck, but it didn't, like, totally work for people. This Sonic, I think, fits in the real world in a, like, a worse way. Like, I think the other one looked like shit, but it looked more, I guess, like, realistic. Like, it looked like it could be, like living in our world. This one definitely stands out more of a cartoon, but that's what I think people would prefer anyway. So it's an interesting contrast, I think, comparing to something like Lion King, where people wanted the more cartoony, like true to form lions, were like, all right, maybe make them have a little more emotion. Where this one definitely doesn't fit as well. Like, it's not like, it doesn't seem as true to like live action as like you could be Sonic the Hedgehog, but it is better for what people want to see and for fans, for people who actually give a shit about this, if that makes sense.
I think they took some cues from Detective Pikachu.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think for something like this, you can't go too realistic. I mean, that was a horrifying looking Sonic.
Don't get me wrong. It stunk.
Disgusting rat.
So I agree with you, Ken Jack. I think there's always going to be in the age of social media, there's always going to be a very contentious relationship between content and content makers. And I don't know what the right balance of that is, but I will say that this Sonic was so awful that they had to do something about it or nobody was going to see this movie. If it wasn't a conspiracy, which I don't think it is, but I want to believe.
I wanted to ask you this because I never played a ton of Sonic growing up. I'm assuming you, out of all of us, probably played the most, right, Trill?
Yeah, I was as we call in the Sonic community, a Sonic head.
Mm-hmm. He's a hedgehog. A hedgehog might work better. Some play off hedge, but we'll work off that. So how did you feel about it? How did you feel about it?
I thought it looked fine. It looked good. It's tough because I've never watched any of the Sonic animated shows or anything where Sonic has a personality other than him just being a rad hedgehog with a toad problem. Mm-hmm. And to see him be wacky was kind of weird. But it was fine. He looked good. He looked like the video game, which is the way I think they should have gone. It was a little disappointing to not have Tails in there. But you can only ask for so much. And I also don't care that much.
Hmm. And now we just need to see him pregnant next to Tails. And that completes the canon of Sonic. That was my first big experience as a Sonic, was seeing him pregnant in deviant art next to old Tails
with the little blushy face on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the anime blush.
All the impregs have the anime blush on for some reason.
Yep. Yeah. Always. I need to see that pregnant Sonic. Show me the canon, baby.
The director Jeff Fowler tweeted, "Thank you for the last 24 hours, Sonic fans. It's been extraordinary, and there's much more to come."
Like the movie, right?
Much more to come.
That's it. That's what he's talking about. The movie.
Folks, it's like Sonic and Tails, but
that's what a trailer is. that is the implication of releasing a trailer, of saying, I'm glad you're excited, but guess what? There's about 102 more minutes of this.
This movie's gonna suck, by the way, right?
Like, yeah, that's like the bottom line. This is still gonna suck regardless. And now they had a bunch of animators like who probably got given a shitty vision regardless, and then had to redo all of their work again and go again. The movie had to go over budget and all this. Like, that all sucks for them because this movie's still going to be bad.
I might actually buy a ticket off. I don't think it matters because AMC A-list factors it in. I might just go buy a regular old plane ticket for this movie. is to feel like I'm giving them something back.
I do appreciate this. Go see the premiere or something.
I will see this immediately. Ticket. We'll post this trailer 100 fucking, like, they deserve the, like, I think they're genuine in redoing this for fans. So they deserve that. But I just can't see this being good.
No.
No, but it could be not horrible.
Sure.
My ceiling for this is the wild card here, right? Like that, Jim Carrey is the X factor in this whole calculus of whether or not this movie is going to be good.
So I'm setting the ceiling for this at like a 65. What would you set it at?
Yeah, that sounds fair. That sounds fair. What did I give Detective Pikachu? I forget.
Like I want to say like a 70 something. Mid 70s.
I think that's the ceiling for this because I think Detective Pikachu is about as good as that could have been. When that whole concept came out, I was ready to give it a 20 and throw it in the trash can right next to baby diapers, but it was okay. I do think it's cool. I do think it's cool that the animators were able to deliver something that people wanted. So I don't want to slight them, but it's a challenge. Making a Sonic the Hedgehog video game movie, that's tough.
Making any video game movie is hard. Making a movie is hard.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing. It's a whole Seth Rogen, I think, had a whole like, I forget it was Seth Rogen. I think it was on the Howard Stern show. He was talking about like how every movie was basically a miracle with everything that has to come together. And it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I guess like that chapter is over till the movie comes out, right?
Mm-hmm. And then we probably won't even watch it or review it. We'll see. And we're going to watch it, but still.
I'll definitely going to review this.
I'm going to wait for Game Master Anthony's review.
Yeah, that's what we really need to see. That's the only opinion that matters here.
Scoob.
They crucified me, Scoob.
They went from live action Scoob.
Shout out to Sex J.
Live action Scoob to animated Scoob. We're just kind of reversing things here.
Scoob looks fine. You know what I liked about this trailer? I liked how they had a logical canon explanation for how Scooby-Doo got his name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the one thing you really want.
It was a whole P-tier Griffin moment, and it worked.
Yeah, it worked there, and then yet again, you guys despised him solo.
Wait. Excuse me.
Yeah, same shit.
It's the same fucking terrible shit. It's stupid in Solo.
It's not stupid in Scooby-Doo.
You
hate
it in Solo.
Scooby-Doo is basically Marmaduke who fucking went to Harvard. Like,
I would argue it's almost dumber here. I've never looked at a dog and been like, oh, I really need a good explainer on the name there.
The dog can talk.
Like, there's a way that...
The dog did the movie announcer voice in the trailer.
It did. In a world. Like, that's Scoob.
I will say there, okay, so I didn't really read comments on this because the feedback
Judge Revolta
we got...
Shaggy.
Oh my God, they crucified me. What's Pontius Pilate doing at my house, Scoob?
Scoob, get on the Learjet, Scoob.
No.
I'm a pilot.
The critiques on this on YouTube are that Shaggy doesn't sound enough like a stoner. Shaggy voiced by Will Forte. Scooby doesn't talk with an R in front of every one of his words like he does in cartoons, which I got to re-listen to that. And then they say, everyone says Velma looks like Kylie Jenner. That's the critiques on YouTube. We didn't see many critiques on Twitter. I don't know about the LCB Instagram page. But
they all just said this looks like trash for the most part.
Oh, that makes sense. That lines up with Instagram. Twitter seemed kind of positive on this because people love the pictures. The first released photos people really liked.
Photos were good. Let's see. It would have cost them $0 not to make this. Voice acting is terrible. Pulling the heartstrings with a big RIP to Avicii. I didn't really catch on to that. Oh, they did use a really old EDM remix on this. I did catch on to that. Let's see. The IKEA joke got me. Oh, I do remember that. And then a bunch of just people caping for Matthew Lillard to come back and do Scoob.
Oh, right.
So again, I'll pull for the course. It makes sense.
That's live action Scoob. This is animated Scoob.
Totally different Scoob.
Different Scoobs.
He's not even on the cross.
And remember, this is the Hanna-Barbera crossover movie. Fucking Blue Falcon's going to be in this. Dick Dastardly. Captain Caveman, played by Tracy Morgan. Mark Wahlberg plays Blue Falcon. So, like, it's going to be weird. It's going to be different. I'm looking forward to it. Just a fun, it's also in May. I felt like this was going to be a January, February movie. It's going to be a fun, whatever movie, right? Like not going to overthink. I assume this one won't be hitting the Oscar animated best picture nomination side of things, but we'll see.
No, we'll probably see. Not.
Scoob look okay. We talked about Fantasy Island on the last podcast. They hadn't released a trailer yet from Blumhouse. That's when Trill made a joke about The League, the old FX fantasy football show. Fantasy Island. This is the synopsis. Ready? The enigmatic Mr. Rourke makes the secret dreams of his lucky guests come true at a luxurious but remote tropical resort. But when the fantasies turn into nightmares, the guests have to solve the island's mystery in order to escape with their lives. From Blumhouse, stars Lucy Hale, who was already in a Blumhouse movie.
Truth or Dare, right?
She was in Truth or Dare. Michael Pena, Maggie Q, Austin Stowell, Jimmy O. Yang, Michael Rooker. Boy, this one got for as much as I got positive vibes from Blumhouse's Invisible Man, I got the negative vibes from this one. There's something about this that seems so cliche and tacky and like it just ain't going to work. Just something about it just reeks of this is the one that costs little and makes a lot for Blumhouse.
Mm-hmm. I think what was the guy's name in the beginning? Mr. Rourke. So it's Fantasy Island run by Mickey Rourke is what I'm getting implied right here. And I'm already into it. I would actually love to watch that movie.
You put more it is Mickey based Rourke on a TV stuff. Show, by the way. It's based on a TV show from the 70s. I think, yes, 1977 to 1984. So there's source material there. Yeah,
that's the thing with the plane, right? Yeah. Is that Ricardo Montalban, or am I thinking of something else?
Nope, you are thinking of the proper thing, yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really care too much for this, but good for Blumhouse make turn in a profit, as I'm sure they will in this.
You know, I don't really care. I don't.
You haven't said one of those in a while.
I like Blumhouse. I do. They've won my affection. They have.
They're this grinders, one, man.
Yeah, this one, not all shots are going to go in, and that's okay. That's not the intent.
That's not, and that's why I respect the shit out of Blumhouse.
They're a volume shooter. They want the points.
Yep. Yep. That's why I like Blumhouse. I like what they're doing. They know what they're doing. So that's what is that in there on Fantasy Island? We have a skit here, I believe.
And now, please welcome to the stage here at Cannes International Film Festival, director of The Lighthouse, Robert Eggers.
Hello, hello. I'm Robert Eggers, and I'm excited to show you my new film. Before we start it, I just want to make you all aware of something. I know many of you expect Robert Pattinson, Willem Dafoe to be in this, but the film required extensive reshoots, which their schedules could not accommodate. I know, I'm sorry. It's unfortunate. And we were forced to reshoot the entire thing with two new actors, but I think you will all be pleased with the results. So enjoy my film, The Lighthouse, starring, ladies and gentlemen, John Travolta and Steven Tyler.
Living on the edge. I can't wait to start our shift at The Lighthouse, Mr. Wake. Yeah! Got scars on my microphone.
Hawk, baby. Just don't forget to clean out the pool house, Winslow. Oh, my God.
Ah, yeah, my daughter. She was in the leftovers, baby. Ooh, I can't believe I found this wooden sculpture of Cindy Crawford. I'm gonna bubba 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 bust. Yeah!
You're fond of my chicken parmesan, ain't you? I seen it. Oh, my God. You're fond of my chicken palm. Say it. Say it.
I could lay awake just to see you breathe. Ah! Oh, I don't have nothing to say, baby. Yeah.
And damn you. Oh, my God. Let L. Ron Hubbard strike you dead, Winslow. Hawk, baby. Oh, my God. Hawk, L. Ron, hawk. Bet our father Tom Cruise rides from Sunset Boulevard with fate levels through the roof and strike you down to the depths of obscurity. I beg he remove your entire discography from Spotify and confine you to Pandora to burden you with lawsuits so heavy that you can't afford any more of these outlandish scarves, baby. Oh, my God.
All right, baby. I'm just honking on Bobo. All right. Have it your way, baby. Yeah. going down in an elevator. Walk that way with this chicken palm salmon. Yeah!
That skit. You know what that skit will do, Trill, right?
What?
Knock your socks off, right?
Yeah, baby. And I'm Steven Tyler.
Steven Tyler.
The band Aerosmith.
And Dan Trill both wear Stance socks.
That's a fact.
I got Richie Sambora in the band.
Steven, that's Bon Jovi.
Different band, Steven.
Stance has amazing socks. That's why someone like Steven Tyler do the voice.
What is, like, my Steven Tyler is basically the Dr. Pepper Justin Guarini character.
Yes, it is.
It is a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's that in the not Sammy Hagar, but David Lee Roth Run with the Devil.
Yes, it is the 100%.
Just like these skits, the quality and detail that goes into Stance socks is simply incredible. All themes. You can get regular socks, but come on, get the theme socks. NBA, MLB teams, NFL, Star Wars, The Office, Marvel, Step Brothers, Elf for Christmas time, Metallica, that's another band. Kid Cudi, that's an artist.
Where's X-Men. Your crown king? Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Brand not only feels good on your feet, it makes your heart feel good too from their annual support of Socks for Heroes, which sends fresh socks to deploy military that badly need them, to collabs that have raised money for clean water initiatives in Africa, to California wildfires, and much more. Stance gives back, and they give you fantastic socks. And right now, our audience gets a free pair of socks with their next order. These are high-quality socks. I said it last time we talked about them. They don't rip. I have like 10 pair, Star Wars, Marvel, some sports team stuff. All you have to do is go to Stance, STANCE.com/lights, LIGHTS. That's Stance.com/lights. Very good stocking stuffer, or just a regular gift for anyone that wears socks with a little personality on them. You don't want to lift up the pant leg of your suit to show off your socks when you got just regular plain-ass socks. You got to have a little flair on there.
Good socks.
Yeah, baby. I tie socks around my microphone.
That would be great, his next sponsorship.
Stance.com/lights. That was a trip. I had to go on mute for that skit. I was laughing too hard.
That's my worst Travolta impression yet. It was a little bit of cold.
Like at some point.
I just lost it. I lost it.
Disney Plus. We said we'd talk about it. I want to get, again, you can hear the full thoughts from myself and Ken Jack on Mandalorian. We both said good, not great, but we did enjoy it, especially the end of the episode. It's a setup episode. It's tough to have a setup. We've never had a setup anything for Star Wars, really, right? Like, especially to this, like, dramatic magnitude. But I did enjoy it, and I liked it even more the second time because the first time we watched it in a room with a big glare on the TV. So it was kind of hard to tell what we were watching. But very pumped for the second episode that comes out the week of. 100 million people signed up for Disney Plus in the first 24 hours. And the projection, or excuse me, not 100, 10 million, not 100 million. That's
yeah, it was like Netflix Holy running shit. The numbers.
yeah, Netflix. 1 trillion. Yeah, but still, the projection from analysts was that Disney Plus would hit 8 million by the end of the year. They hit 10 million in fucking 24 hours. That's nuts. That explains why the system was down, by the way.
Bad analysts.
Yeah, bad call, analysts. Initial thoughts on Mandalorian, Trill. Also, George Lucas, we have uncovered yet another change from George Lucas in the original trilogy. They once again, for the fourth time.
Jar Jar is actually a woman.
Greedo. Greedo needs to say something now before he shoots Han. They changed the Greedo and Han Solo thing. They changed it years ago because they were going to be re-releasing all the Star Wars movies in 3D. I actually saw The Phantom Menace in 3D, and then they stopped doing it because, like, the 3D thing kind of fell apart. Disney bought Lucasfilm, all that shit. So this actually change happened years ago, but they're finally seeing it now. The 4K version of the movies is the one that George changed. I don't think we've uncovered any other changes, but I'm kind of keeping an eye on it. I know people uncover it when they do.
So are these still the special editions?
They're yes, okay. these are the infamous 2004 DVD or the Blu-ray special edition releases that were then changed after that.
So why? Yeah.
I don't fucking know. He says the same line that Sebulba says to Jar Jar in The Phantom Menace, like Mulcahy or some shit. Like, I don't know exactly what it is. I try not to pay attention to it too much. I'm going to rewatch these. I'll see it for myself.
Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah. But Mandalorian trail, back to that. Thoughts on the first episode of Mandalorian? Spoiler warning here. I'm not going to restrict you from not saying anything. So kind of fire from the hip, whatever you got.
I'm with you. I thought it was okay. I thought it was good. I don't know. Like, I don't know what I was expecting, but it met my expectations. I wouldn't say it exceeded them. It's pretty much where I thought the show would be. I liked the second half of the episode when he met up with IG-11 better than I liked the first half.
Yep.
I think that probably was universal consensus, because the scenes where he had the fish man who talked about dumping his thorax into the potty, I hated that. I thought that was dumb as shit. I was that the first talk of anybody pooping?
Yes, that's what we're mentioning.
That was the first, not poop, because there's been Jar Jar stepped in poop, and then Jar Jar had
of a toilet.
You know, like having to pee or poop.
Correct, yeah, but it was not the first, like, fecal reference or anything like that, yeah.
No, but up until this point, nobody's ever acknowledged that these characters in the Star Wars
universe actually shit and piss.
Correct. Excrete.
I know. I just wanted to make it clear that we have had poop and piss before, but no, not the idea of going pee. Of relieving oneself.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the dialogue and Attack of the Clones.
Folks.
So it was good. I really like the end, though. I like the Yoda baby, because we don't have a species. It wasn't actually Yoda as a baby. It was the same species as Yoda, a baby version.
Again, this is 5 years after Return of the Jedi, so 5 years after he passed. But yeah, the baby's 50, and that would have lined up with around, like, I think when Anakin was a kid. So I think that's kind of the timing for it.
Is it going to be Yoda's kid?
I don't think so.
I think it's Yoda's clone.
Maybe. I don't know. But I thought that was good. That was because what I was expecting, and I don't know why I expected this, I expected Boba Fett to be in that building.
To be in the building? That
I did too.
For?
To be in the building. I thought they were going to cut the doors down. I thought there was going to be an aged Boba Fett without his mask or whatever, and that was going to be it. That was going to be the end of the episode.
I didn't think that he would command that much of a bounty at this point. The guy who got eaten up by, like, the Sand Anus, I didn't really think he was the guy that they would be hunting, or Werner Herzog would be hunting down. So I get the thought process, but I just didn't see it.
That's fair. But in that moment, what you just said is, like, I think the correct thought. But in that moment, I was like, oh shit, here we go. Here he is. That's probably because the rumor is there. Now, they did say that Boba can be seen in one scene. We talked about, if you brighten the image, it very much looks like Boba Fett.
Mm-hmm.
However, I just don't think that's what they did.
Which part of the app? Like, where?
When he walks in, I'll send you the pictures I'm talking about it. When he walks in to the Mandalorian kind of, like, I don't know, like,
consulate.
Yeah. You see him in the background. If you super brighten the image, like, you have to take a screenshot and brighten it up, and you see him. I mean, it is his fucking armor. It definitely looks like him, but I don't know. I don't think that's what they're going for there. I don't know. I just said it to you. You can take a look at it. Give me your thoughts. But
it looks like Boba Fett. I like that. I like the whole Mandalorian smithing process. It did make me more interested in the lore of the Mandalorian. I thought the whole flashback scene was kind of dumb. Like, that was very on brand for Star Wars, though, mm-hmm. So I can't fault it too much. But overall, it was good. I can see myself, like, with this production quality, I can see myself watching countless hours of both this and other Star Wars television shows and preferring them to, say, movie adaptations of them.
That's fair. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to redo the thoughts.
Don't.
Watch our video.
Yeah, correct. Like that. Anything else, though, from Disney Plus that you would take away?
I watched Noel, and it stinks.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to watch Noel.
It's not very good.
That's so disappointing, both Noel and Last Christmas Bricking.
Mm-hmm.
That is.
Well, I mean, it's weird because I guess like if I were to rate it on the Christmas movie scale, it'd probably be like okay. But like on the general movie scale, it's not very good.
Yeah, but see, like I hate that idea.
Yeah, I agree. And I know,
and I know that's not your idea. I know that's not, it's not like, that's not your concept. Like people say that all the time because I think Elf, I think Home Alone, I think Bad Santa, like, fucking name any classic, right? Miracle on 34th Street or It's a Wonderful Life. Those are like actually good movies and they're Christmas movies. So I don't know. I think you saying they brick just sounds, is like a great, it's a great, that's a great explainer on that.
Anna Kendrick though, you know, she probably did her thing. I'm sure she was great in this.
She's perfect in it. She's like the most like adorable human being on earth. So she just fits in perfectly in this world. It's just like for me going into the movie, expecting a little bit more of Bill Hader and Billy Eichner, or it was just like kind of disappointing because they're not really part of the movie at all. It's all about Anna Kendrick, which is like nothing wrong with that. It's just I preferred to see more of both of them.
I watched Mr. Right the other night.
Mr. Right?
Yeah, with Anna Kendrick and Sam Rockwell.
Oh yeah. Yep.
I think it was Mr. Right, where he's the hitman.
He's like the hitman guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Where's the clown nose?
Mm-hmm.
It was okay.
I remember it being a movie. I gotta say, don't remember much else about
it. Thank you.
It's okay. That's a movie I watched.
Next up, Nickelodeon. They're teaming up with Netflix, and they're going to be producing new content based on existing properties and new properties. There isn't a fucking soul in the world that read those headlines and went, oh, new properties. Everyone's now thinking nostalgia. Great move by Netflix the day after Disney Plus. Seeing people talk about things like Gargoyles and Lizzie McGuire. I mean, just go down the rap sheet of IP. Doug, Rugrats, Ren and Stimpy, Rocko's Modern Life, Ah, Real Monsters, Hey Arnold, Kablam, Angry Beavers, Cat Dog. Yeah, I mean, SpongeBob, but SpongeBob's still kicking. We're going to admit the SpongeBob trailer is going to be coming out the day after we record here, unfortunately. We'll talk about it on Sunday. But there's a lot of shows, and we've mentioned it before, Trill. I know it's something that you've talked about. A lot of these older cartoons, they had shorter shelf lives. Like, that's just how they ran with Nickelodeon, right? Like, they'd have a couple successful seasons, they go off the air. So there's a lot of stuff that can kind of be brought up that doesn't have a shitload of episode backlog that they can redo and make new cartoons of. I can't say there's one that I'd love to see back that I would dive into. I'd like to go back and watch older episodes of things like Rocket Power. Like, I feel like that might be fun, like, every now and then, like, nothing to watch. Like, I'll dive into an episode or two to see what that was like. A nice reminder. But I can't think of anything off the top of my head that I'd love to see refreshed. The thing I want to see the most, though, are the old live-action game shows. I'd love to run back a couple of Legends of the Hidden Temple. Guts, just to get an old deep dive. They took Nickelodeon Gas off the air, that old cool channel.
What was your favorite physical competition show Nickelodeon had?
It's tough because my favorite competition show was definitely Figure It Out with Summer Sanders. I thought that was my favorite one, but Legend of the Hidden Temple was my favorite in terms of the physical stuff.
I always liked Nick Arcade.
That makes sense.
Because I really thought they were in a video game when I was watching it, and it was the coolest thing I've ever seen. I was, man, I'd love to be in that video game. And then you realize they were just standing in front of a green screen looking at a television like a weatherman trying to grab coins and shit. Oh, that is suck.
What video game would you want to be in, Trill?
Did Nickelodeon always do the Toys R Us sweeps?
Yeah, you could win the Toys R Us sweeps, yeah.
I like to go back and watch some of those because that was always my dream as a kid. Like, could you imagine being a kid and
Who
is the dude who used to do that? It was it Doug?
Mike O'Malley?
Mike O'Malley, yes.
Mike O'Malley did Guts, right?
Yeah. He used to do the super. Apparently, Mike O'Malley is a super cool dude because I remember going on Reddit and reading stories from people who had won the Nickelodeon thing. Now, they could have been making it up, but I choose not to believe that. That was always my dream. I would just go straight to the video game aisle and pull all those tickets. It was back in the day where you pulled the tickets and had to take it up to the front lockbox to get your video game. Oh,
I do remember that. Also, to bring back Supermarket Sweep. Speaking of sweep, that I am looking forward to that. I do love Supermarket Sweep. But I like that. Another one, this was kind of past your time, Trill, was Slime Time Live. That was always a big jealousy thing. Like, you come home from school,
you got to do homework. And there's these kids in Orlando in this nice sunny weather, and they're getting slimed and they're winning free cool prizes like CD players and, or maybe even fucking, it was definitely CD player era when Slime Time Live was out.
Was this like their TRL?
Yep.
Nickelodeon. Okay. Yeah.
Yep. During commercial, you call in and you'd hit like, you'd hit a number on your phone. It would, you know, you try to uncover two Eliza Thornberries or two
I like
squids
the green
from
slime.
Rocket Power.
Coming in at number one slime for the 141st straight week is green slime.
So like, I think some of that's cool to see back, but like, is there anything that you would really care enough about to see from Nickelodeon, like revived and rebooted?
I liked Rugrats and Doug. Like in Ren and Stimpy.
Ren and Stimpy was definitely more highbrow and more adult.
Yeah, I was super adult. Super adult. Because those actually, I can't believe how long those have been on the air. Because Rugrats, I think, came out in 1992.
91, think, actually. August 11, 91. And it lasted 13 years, which is just not normal for those types of shows.
No, because I, like, a lot of these things I feel like, you know, were past my time. But no, that was very much up my alley. I'd go back and rewatch it. But like overall, it just doesn't seem like something with a long rewatchability or draw. I feel like you go back and watch an episode of Legends of the Hidden Temple and you're like, okay, like that's,
well, like
I
get that.
Just, yeah, this would be like a 2 or 3 episode watch thing. And then you just don't do it anymore.
I
right.
Mean, I guess it was cool. We all went as the contestants that won Halloween and got shit faced, but I don't really need to watch the television show anymore.
I was more of a Cartoon Network kid growing up. So I feel like this doesn't really resonate for me too much.
Oh, somebody had cable.
Dude, same fucking people have Cartoon Network.
No, I know. Everyone had cable when you grew up. But when I grew up, like, a lot of people did not have cable. We had cable, though. I'm just saying.
What a bizarre, like, reverse flex.
Weird way to flex, yeah.
Huge flex. No, because I'm just drinking nostalgia through a fire hose right now.
Well, let's keep the nostalgia going for at least one more thing, and that is a Friends reunion is in the works for HBO Max, another Disney Plus.
Could this HBO be any more Max?
Get a load of this society. We're selling a Joker Christmas sweater that says Dancing Through the Snow, and it's him on the stairs, and the Ross Geller Get a Load of This Society meme. It's just
Get a load of this society.
Pivot. So yeah, the day of Disney Plus, HBO Max is like, well, we should probably get in on this. And so they announced that a Friends reunion is in the works. It seems like it's going to be, it says unscripted, and therefore perhaps not the new proper episode some fans might want. That just sounds like that's not at all what they're
Nobody
selling.
Wants that. I don't even think the fans do.
It's a reunion. And then there's like, and also it's just not going to be anything like what you expect. It's not going to be an episode. So
it just,
but reunion.
It's going to drag everyone to the Central Perk set that's preserved at some like Museum of Television History in Orlando, Florida.
I think it's like if you go on the Universal Studios backlot, or not Universal, because that wouldn't be on HBO Max, Warner Brothers backlot tour, it's just still there. And you can just sit on the couch or some shit.
That's crazy. So what are they going to be in character unscripted, or are they just going to, is it going to be like Courtney Cox, Jennifer Aniston?
I really like Friends. We also know The Office is getting a reboot as well, though that one's for sure going to be scripted. I really like Friends a lot. It's not the most fucking galaxy brain genius level comedy, but I still get laughs out of things. I'm a sucker for Joey Tribbiani, but
hey,
unscripted reunion sounds horrible.
That's so dumb.
Horrible.
I mean, Matt LeBlanc's still cashing checks, doing some shit. I saw, what's his name?
He does the car show now. Matt LeBlanc does the Top Gear.
Yeah, he does Top Gear. Yeah, and he was in that, is or wasn't that show, Episodes, which I never watched, and I will one day. It's apparently very good.
Schwimmer's playing, come on, Juice. He's playing him. I saw him in that Laundromat movie with Meryl Streep. That was terrible. And he's doing other things. I feel like they're all got shit going on, except for, what's her name? Not Kira Sedgwick. Whoever played Phoebe. What's her name?
No, she does. Lisa Kudrow's in tons of stuff, dude.
Yeah. All right, cool. Then she's doing stuff too. Why do they need to do this? Something unscripted. Actually, that's going to
suck. Was she in a movie we nostalgia reviewed?
Yes. Fuck. What was she in?
I feel like if it's nostalgia review, then it's not doing stuff, is it?
No, she is another thing. She had an original show on one of the like the cable networks. She's in BoJack, I know.
She was in Easy A. She was in Kimmy Schmidt.
She was in Kimmy Schmidt? I don't remember.
She was Kimmy's mom.
Oh, duh, that's right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah, like the crazy not meth head, but like crazy person.
What movie was she in? What the fuck?
So I think if we could rank the post success of them, I think it would be Jennifer Aniston, Courtney Cox. I think Lisa Kudrow's three. I really do.
Above Schwimmer? You mean he was in Band of Brothers?
I think she's above Schwimmer. Just
no
in terms
of People vs. America. Or whatever that is.
That's tough. I would put Schwimmer above her.
Schwimmer was legitimately awesome in Band of Brothers. As Captain Sobel, he was really, really good. Enjoyed him quite a bit.
Matthew Perry has not been in much, that's for sure.
It's good in Scrubs. He flew the model planes or whatever.
He was in, remember he did that TV. Didn't he do a Sorkin TV show?
He was
Sunset Studio.
Studio on 60.
On the Sunset Strip. Was that a Sorkin show?
Yeah, he was Studio 60, right?
I think so.
Yeah. That was a while ago, though. I think he was Studio 60. He was, yeah, Studio 60, Sunset Strip. That was two or three seasons. Yeah, I'm mixing up with Game Night or whatever it's called.
Yeah, shout out to Keira Sedgwick, the closer. Great show.
Yes.
Do you remember who played? Do you remember who played Rachel?
Courtney Cox was in Cougar Town. Rachel's sister was played by Reese Witherspoon and what's her face? Christina Applegate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Two sisters.
That's right.
Now Aniston and Reese Witherspoon are together again.
Do you remember who played Phoebe's sister?
No.
I mean, I'm currently.
I've never watched Friends.
Lisa
so
Kudrow
not...
played her.
Yeah, they were
Ursula.
Twins.
It's a little Friends trivia.
I'm still going through the show slowly but surely, just rewatching it again. So yeah, it's probably an unfair one to answer. Our coworker, we have a coworker, Glenny Balls, if you're not a Barstool fan, who's knows more about Friends than anything I've ever seen in my life. It's just absolutely.
Could this burger be any more boozing?
Yeah, I would. I mean, it's definitely Jennifer Aniston. Then after that, Courtney Cox is the one that I can't think of things she's been in recently besides Cougar Town.
Shit, I feel like she has been. Hold on.
And Matt LeBlanc's been in a handful of stuff as well. And again, Episodes is a show that Joey. I know people really like.
I think they've all done fine.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And they're still making a shitload of money.
I think they've all
Modern
done.
Family.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, she was in Modern Family for one episode as a guest star.
As a guest star.
Actually, next year, not even this year.
Damn. Shameless. One episode. The Gong Show. That sounds real.
What do you mean?
That's
the Gong
classic show.
The Gong Show's classic. No, she was not in the old Gong Show, I don't think.
Dude, I did not watch Network
TV. She wasn't
the
Bruce Springsteen music video, though.
Running
That's
Wild
true.
Bear Grylls.
Dancing in the Dark.
Barely Famous. Scrubs.
Everybody
she was good in Scrubs. She had a good arc in Scrubs.
Dancing in the Dark.
She had a good short arc.
And obviously, let's not like just gloss over Scream, but Scream is not I think Scream goes without saying. I got to watch Episodes with Matt LeBlanc. Everyone says it's very good. I've never seen it. Matt LeBlanc. All right. That's the Friends reunion. I think that is
Ace Ventura. That's right. I almost forgot. Well, I did forget until I read it, but she was good in Ace Ventura.
That's all we got for news. That's it. Boom. Let's get into movies. Let's talk about what are you going to talk about first. Let's talk about Jojo Rabbit first.
Let's talk about Jojo first.
Okay.
Because I think The Lighthouse is a longer discussion.
Lighthouse. I'm going to apologize in advance to The Lighthouse because I really thought another watch of that movie would really get me to understand it, and I've just decided I'm an idiot. So we'll get to The Lighthouse. Jojo Rabbit from Taika Waititi. Came out a while back, kind of, because it came out in a few places. Now it's wider. If you haven't seen it, please come back to this. Both these reviews are going to be just all spoilers. We got to review these eventually, so we're just going to do it now, because I know they're not everywhere, but they are slowly in more and more theaters. Jojo's a lonely German boy who discovers that his single mother is hiding a Jewish girl in their attic, aided only by his imaginary friend Adolf Hitler. Jojo must confront his blind nationalism as World War II continues to rage on. I mean, that's just an insane synopsis still to this day. Again, directed by Taika Waititi, he plays Hitler in this movie, Scarlett Johansson, Sam Rockwell, Thomasin McKenzie, Rebel Wilson. The little boy Jojo is played by, Roman Griffin Davis is the kid's name. I very much, very, very, very much like this, what is now a super controversial, I don't want to say super, not super controversial, Joker was controversial, a super divisive movie. People are very split on this. Audiences seem to fall for this movie a lot more than critics do. Critics, I have a take on it. I'll save my take on it and how critics are talking about this movie and how I think it's a little ridiculous. I fucking love this movie. I gave it a 94 out of 100. The audience gave it a 94 as well. I think some of the emotional stuff is my only, I think, tick off the movie. I think some of it didn't totally play as well in the, like, along with the comedy and the satire. But that's like, that's a very tiny complaint. I don't really want to talk any negatives about this, so I'm just going to move on from that, because everything from the fucking music choices and how that fit in with the movie, artistically how the movie worked, how it flowed, just the in and out of real life with the imaginary friend with Hitler, the things this movie said about hate, it was so fucking well done, and it takes a special talent. And you know, we're big Taika Waititi fans. Maybe this is biased. It takes someone special to be able to pull that together and make it work and not make it, at least to me, it's subjective, at least to me, not offensive. I think some people are offended by it. Again, I'll talk about that in a second. But I think what Taika Waititi wove together here is something different. It's daring. It says a lot. And it's still, at the same time, also very enjoyable and a fun movie, which, again, I guess that's partly why it offends people. But I don't give a shit. I fucking loved it. I love this movie.
I gave it a 90 out of 100. I think that it was very subtle and yet also like sort of loud at the same time. There's like a very, very clear message like that Taika gets across. Obviously it's like an anti-hate, black comedy. I think that there is a very, it would have been very easy for this movie to not be subtle. Cause I mean, you're talking about like fucking Hitler. It's like the butt of like every joke and every like exaggeration and every fucking hyperbole always jumps to Hitler, especially like right now. It's so easy to make that like a not subtle way to make a hate message. And I think Taika did it well. Doesn't lean too much on like easy cop outs for comedy. I think the actual comedy he uses in it is very funny. The message is good. The acting I thought was phenomenal across the board, not just from Roman Griffin Davis, who plays obviously Jojo, who's great, but like Thomasin McKenzie, who we love from Leave No Trace and many other things, is incredible in this, as she is in basically everything else she does. Everyone else, Sam Rockwell, Rebel Wilson, all great as well. Taika himself as Hitler was very funny. I think the pacing was solid, and I think that it's just a very, very enjoyable film. I don't really understand the critic issue with it so much. Like, again, I kind of get, like, we're kind of like the emotional punch of this. Like, maybe the critics just found it predictable or whatever. I thought it was some really, really shocking and good moments, and just I was very impressed with what Taika was able to do. Again, it would have been extremely, extremely easy for this to be a flop, but considering the subject matter,
I have a thought on why, like what you just said, like why you think people have that opinion on it, and I'll get to that. Let's Trill, you go now, and then we'll get into that, because I do have a lot of thoughts on that.
Okay. I did not like it as much as you guys, but I still liked it. I'm going to give it an 80. So I thought it was a collection of very good scenes. Are we in spoiler section?
Everything is spoiler. We haven't really spoiled anything. So again, one last reminder.
Okay.
Everything from here until our rankings is spoiler for this in the Lighthouse.
I thought that the scene where he was, you know, chasing the butterfly, and then he kind of looks up and then looks to his right and sees his mother's shoes was very well done. I thought that was very emotional. I thought this movie hit those emotional scenes very well. I thought that this is probably one of the better performances I've seen from Scarlett Johansson. I really loved her in this.
Personal favorite,
one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she did a great job. I don't know. It was a collection of good scenes framed around other scenes that I thought were entertaining, but they didn't resonate with me as much as they seem to be resonating with you guys. I know it's described as a dark comedy, and you know that obviously a black comedy that obviously came through, but it was good. I didn't find it great. I enjoyed it. All right. Don't hate me. But
I just I don't. Yeah.
I just didn't 95 enjoy it. Like when
let me be clear too. Obviously we liked it. I'm not saying you can't like this movie. I just take issue with some of the, I don't even want to say I take issue. There's for sure reasons to not like this movie. It's the way the movie's talked about, like it just kind of has me raise my eyebrow a bit. Right. Like I feel like the opinions of this movie are going to change over time. And I feel like people are trying to be safe with how they review and talk about this movie. Because it is, like, I've seen people call it dangerous and, oh, it's too risky, you know, in this time. And like, I've seen reviews that say, like, it's a good movie, not in this period of time, not in today's day and age, which is such a weird mix for me. And I don't want to make this too fucking serious, but I feel like with this subject here, you kind of have to. But, like, that's a weird mix of, like, there's so much hate in the world that, like, this does, I feel like, the point of this movie is laughing at hate, right? Like, it's laughing at things that we despise and that are bad and trying to get that side of things to almost say, like, oh, I'm not angry, right? I'm laughing at you, right? It's that, like, that internet mindset of I'm not mad, I'm actually laughing. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that is the viewer of what you're trying to pull out of laughing at the negatives and, like, the ugliness of World War II and Nazi Germany and all that. Like, that's what Taika's trying to get the audience to do. And that's the reaction I got is, again, and then you're seeing with the two kid characters, the two child characters, is that they have two very differing opinions of each other and of the world. And they're trying to navigate around that hate and around that divide and to find a common ground, to find an understanding and accepting. And that, for me, like, I thought that was beautifully done in today's society. And on top of that, too, the originality, and it's a different, it's a daring movie, and we're in this, and like, not like actual real life culture of things that happen in the real world. In the film world, there's another angle with this fucking Marvel debate, right? Of what's cinema, what's not cinema. This is like, this is artistic. This is different. This takes risks. This takes challenges. And this does things that aren't of the norm. And I was kind of surprised that that isn't fully celebrated. Let me be clear. The critics, the majority like this movie. It won awards, but there are people on the edge about it, right? There are people who kind of are like, oh, I don't know. Like, I'm a little offended by this. I don't think this is the right time or the right place. Like, I think this is the fucking best time to do it. And not everyone has to share that opinion with me. Like, I understand that. But I think if we're going to do it, like, now is the fucking time to do it.
So I think there's two camps to kind of feel in, or kind of fall into with that. And, like, I understand why people would maybe be offended by it, right? Because, like, you get good Nazis. There's good Nazis in this. You don't ever want to show good Nazis in a movie. And, like, there's obviously more context to it than that. Like, there's
toes
like
a fucking
people,
line. Yeah.
There's toes of line. There's three-dimensional people, though. And, like, that's partially a little bit of the message behind it. But I also think that, like, you can watch this movie and take it for what it is without kind of, like, acclimatizing it to what we're dealing with, whatever, right now. Like, not everything needs to relate to what you're doing right now. You can just take it as a message of humanity and not doesn't have to be, like, oh, well, this reminds me of what's happening in the media, and this reminds me of what's happening this. Like, doesn't have to be that way. You can just take it as a message of anti-hatred, which is just a universally good thing. I also do think that maybe this was, like, a little bit predictable, and maybe, like, that would be one thing I would get from critics. Like, I understand being pissed about that, because this movie, you can pretty much predict from start to finish, like, what's going to happen. Because it has been done a million times, not only just with, like, this general theme, but also, like, almost the literal sort of, like, plot with, like, a Nazi. Like, this literal movie almost came out, what, a year ago, where it was the what do you call it? It was, like, a Nazi youth guy, and, like, who was interested in a black woman, and in Nazi Germany, and, like, that came out, like, last year. And, like,
with Amanda,
I forget her name, but yeah, you know what I'm talking about. So, yeah. Like, that movie came out last year. So, I mean, this isn't exactly a groundbreaking and new story. I think the way that Taika Waititi was able to tell it is very fresh and very new, and I think he had his very signature stamp on it, which is, you know, very fun dialogue, very quick, very, very just hilarious in general, and also just, you know, kind of weaving in and out really good music, which he's always been done very, very well. And by the way, the soundtrack on this movie, amazing. Very, very good. Outstanding soundtrack. And I think it's different. It's like it's something you've seen before, but it's also different and much better than the things that you've seen before, like the other movies that are on the same subject matter.
Yeah, I guess I came in blind. I didn't read any reviews, and I'm not online, so I guess the way I interpreted it is I can see the concern with portraying someone like Hitler the way Taika Waititi did. But the whole movie was it was through the eyes of a child. Like this world wasn't, I felt like we were watching the world as the child himself was interpreting it. And it was kind of seeing it through that, like, I don't fully understand the stakes, and I'm, you know, I believe this because this is where I live sort of way. So, like, that's how I just kind of read into the way everything was being portrayed around them. Cause it was like there was like some, I'm going to use the word again, anachronistic like mannerisms being used by like Sam Rockwell and Rebel Wilson, like especially at the start where, you know, they're using German accents speaking English, but they're talking in ways that, you know, we would talk like in 2019. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought that like we were seeing these characters as being like innocent and clumsy or whatever, because that's the way a child would see them without like fully understanding the danger of what lies beneath, because children can't comprehend anything beyond a surface.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And I think they did a good job of just showing how like kids in general just don't really understand like the sort of like the meta scope of shit like that. Like we're all interested and obsessed with stupid shit when we were that age. And like we were, I think, fortunate enough to not grow up in Nazi Germany, where that would be something you would latch onto, like a cult of personality thing, like just the Nazi movement and all that. Luckily for us, it was like, for me, it was Bionicles. For him, it was the Hitler Youth. So yeah, I think they did a good job of just showing how like that glass can kind of get shattered once you realize like, once it's whatever you're doing is actually part of something bad. So,
right. And like good. it was kind of him. I mean, it was a story of a 10-year-old somewhat losing his innocence. Mm-hmm. And it was through the lens of like, you know, losing your innocence when you're in the Hitler Youth, which mm-hmm. is fucking, that's a fucked up concept. Right. So like I can definitely understand what people might be saying about this, but the way I interpreted it is it was like that because a child was seeing it and therefore it made sense to me.
Mm-hmm. And I think the broader conversation I would just want to have on this movie too is just, you take away all the whatever non-controversy about it, I think it was just a generally great movie. I think that like Taika, what he does with colors is always amazing. Like in the beginning of the movie, everything is super bright, super saturated and all that, and as it becomes like, as you get into like the darker parts of the movie, everything gets muted. It's no longer like, you know, super colorful. It's like really dark, gross, nasty. He always does that great. Again, music was incredible, and it was really fucking funny, man. The kid who played Yorkie, Jojo's best friend, fucking hilarious, dude. Every time he was on screen, I was laughing my ass off. That kid ruled. I think that Sam Rockwell and Rebel Wilson killed it, and I agree with Trill, by the way. Again, Scarlett Johansson, I think this is my favorite role I've seen her in probably ever. I think she is like built for this sort of comedy, where it's not her trying to do dramatic, super dramatic acting. It's her being able to kind of like show off more of a funny side, which I think she can do really well. And in this one, it's like something like super quick and funny. Like I think she is really built for this sort of role, and she fit it perfectly. I really don't think anyone had a poor performance, which I think not only just speaks to the cast, but it speaks to what Taika Waititi is able to get out of his actors in basically every movie, at least I've seen him make.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he really did make a great movie. And I think, again, my only like small critique would have been like just a little tone here and there, but I think even the bigger emotional stuff still did work. Trill includes it, the scene where he sees that his mother's been hanged. It's just like it kind of strikes you, but it's striking and shocking in a way that still works and fits, even though the movie is pretty wacky. Like, it is very funny, and the way it is written is very funny as well. There's a couple things really caught my attention and got a pretty big laugh. I like when Sam Rockwell's character is looking for dogs and it's actual German shepherds, like mm-hmm. actual male, like shepherds, not the actual dog, German shepherds.
Yep.
Laughed out loud at that. Laughed
both
out loud.
Times. He's seen again in the final battle. It was very funny.
When they're going back and forth and they're talking about JoJo is going back and forth with Elsa, and they're talking about like, she's like, you're not actually a Nazi. He's like, oh, like I'm really into swastikas. And it's like that type of shit. Like, I get why that's edgy. I get why that's tough. But the way he was able to do that and make fun of it and make fun of like how people view, like, again, like Hitler Youth, or how people lined up and like what was kind of telling them to do that wasn't like genuine, right? Like, they're just seeing and taking the lead of people who were in Nazi Germany. Like, he just did it really well. Again, like I get it's subjective. I get not everyone's going to have that be their taste. I was just a little surprised that the reaction to what was made was so negative, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was just a bit surprising to me. Because other than that, like, most of the critiques, and this is truly why I think in 5 years people are going to have different opinions on it. I think most of the critiques were like, yeah, it's a good movie. Just for me, this wasn't the right time for this or something like that, which just, you know, took me a little bit by surprise. I didn't totally expect that, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. I think once we're kind of out of this larger climate, maybe people are going to look back on this and be like, wow, I was a little too harsh on a movie.
Yeah, I think it's like, oh, wait, this is something that's good. And this is something that what this movie says is a, still a great message. You know, it's wrapped up in this like really fucked up setup, but that's what it is, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's exactly what they're making here.
That's why it's a fucking black comedy, man.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I don't know. I know something like Death of Stalin is obviously different, but is it too much different? Like, it still makes
not really. I mean, funny, they, right? They make jokes out of like the fucking political purges after Stalin's death, like people getting murdered in mass. Like that's part of what makes a black comedy, man.
I think I don't know. I really don't. I'm not gonna say fake woke. That's like not what I'm saying. You kind of get where I'm like. That's the line I'm getting to. There's like people want to be like, oh, well, I'm offended by this, just so they let people know that this is offensive or this like may not be kosher with like culture. I don't know. I don't know. I don't make this too fucking serious because I do get it to an extent, but it is, I don't know. I was surprised by it is kind of my point.
I mean, art is subjective and open for interpretations. And I think that's an interpretation of it. Right. Like,
mm-hmm.
I think that's completely fair. And I think like being attuned to it's good too. I mean, the discussion around it is healthy. And certainly you guys have thought a lot about your opinions on it. And I'm still thinking about mine and like what this movie meant and everything like that. But it was a very well-made movie.
Go ahead, Trill.
No, go ahead.
I'll say I even get to like if the comedies work, because I mean, talk about like something this kind of edgy and towing the line, like that is subjective, but also it's comedy too. So if the comedy doesn't work, like if you don't laugh at like the mocking of it after a while, like I'm sure maybe it's not your movie. I totally get that. Like if you're like, oh, like I liked it, it was funny, but for me it kind of got stale after a while. Like it was up my alley, but I could totally see where people be like, all right, we get the joke already, right? Like we get it. It's satire. Hitler's like not really Hitler, blah, blah, blah. So I totally get that aspect of it too. So it's just like, it's this like double pronged effect here going on.
Yeah. I mean, but the Hitler's the child's version of Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's like what, I mean, I get it. Like I understand like you definitely don't want to underplay how bad Hitler was. But for me in context of the movie is like, he was that way because that's how like a child sees somebody that he's told to revere, right? When you're 10, you like whoever your parents tell you to like.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Your society, whatever tells you is important or good to like.
Yep. I think it's definitely worth seeing though, especially, you know, we love our comic book movies. We have three gauntlets on our shared desk at work, but I love something different. Love something unique, you know, daring to do something that you don't always see in theaters. That's a bit riskier. This was definitely it. And I hope it's in more theaters too, because come on, gotta go see it. Go see it on the big screen. Again, the music too. The German versions of all this music. You got the fucking Beatles in this movie.
Oh yeah. I want to hold your hand. And then
nuts.
German Beatles ruled.
German version was it Heroes? David Bowie Heroes?
Yeah, that was the last song.
Yeah, it was really good too. That ending sequence when they're just dancing in the street. Oh, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. That was so I think, you know, what TD
7 years he's been making this, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, 7 years he pitched it. I was watching an interview with him on Kimmel, I think he was on. Yeah, Kimmel, and he was saying, I pitched it. The people I pitched to were like, no. And he's like, okay, let me write it. So he wrote it, and then he got kind of distracted, made Thor, made a bunch of other movies. He did the TV series, What We Do in the Shadow, all that shit. And he finally got around to making it, and now here it is.
It's based off of a book.
Yep. It's an adaptation of a book.
Yeah.
But you gotta always adapt that.
It's still really, I mean, it's still a very original concept for a movie, even though it's based off of a book, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It's
something different. 94 from me, 94 from the audience, 90 from Ken Jack, 80 from Trill, super buttered. let's talk about The Lighthouse. Movie we made fun of months ago. I don't think we're gonna be doing any making fun of it right now. I would expect none of us are about to do that. The Lighthouse is one of the most insane movies I've ever seen. This movie is fucking batshit crazy. Robert Eggers made the movie. He's a director. He also did The Witch, or it's stylized
The Vitch.
The Vitch, two V's, which I liked the art of that movie. I liked that aspect. I didn't fully connect with The Witch. But I, for what it was, I respect the filmmaking of what Robert Eggers does, and I can say that tenfold with this one, because the art and the technical aspects of making this movie were fucking off the charts. And I did resonate a lot more with this movie, but I still don't totally know what I just saw, even though I've seen it multiple times now. Two lighthouse keepers try to maintain their sanity while living on a remote and mysterious New England island in the 1890s, excuse me. Robert Pattinson, Willem Dafoe, play Winslow, F. Winslow, Wake. Willem Dafoe plays Wake. Insane performances, especially from Willem Dafoe. I think it's incredible. I still don't totally get it. I've looked up many things, watched many videos, a lot of Greek mythology, which, I mean, look, if you listen to this podcast, you know my areas of expertise are comic movies, Star Wars, and like the fast food and chain restaurant industry. Greek mythology right over my fucking head, just so completely over my head. So I don't totally get it. I'd love to hear what you guys think, because that aspect of things, I'm still trying to grasp it, but what I watched was incredibly fucking captivating. And part of why I liked it so much, my score, 92 out of 100, is because it has me thinking, and I will always, always fall for a movie that racks my brain like that in a way that also isn't overly pretentious, that isn't snobby about it either. Like a movie that isn't going, I'm smart. Like, try to understand me. To me, I didn't pull that from this. Maybe it was the farts. There's a lot of farts in this movie.
A lot of farting.
My thing is, it's easy to think that from the trailers.
Mm-hmm. Correct. That's what we thought. Yeah.
Just because it's in black and white, by the way.
Because of the aspect ratio.
We're not smart people. I gave it a 90. I really enjoyed it. I didn't really know what to think until they started getting drunk together. And when that started happening, you started getting some of the best fucking acting performances I feel like I've seen in a while, especially, and who would have thought I would have come away from this thinking like Robert Pattinson, essentially Rick Rostam on Devil in a New Dress, because that's what he did. Like Robert Pattinson destroyed Willem Dafoe on his own record, because he did a phenomenal job. The line where he talks about the steak line, right?
It's so good.
It's like, I want a steak.
I want to fuck a steak.
People started laughing. I didn't expect people to laugh one time in this movie, and there are certain points in this that just got so ridiculous. But it was like laughing with it, not at it. I thought it was insane. I don't know if I'm smart enough to say this movie is brilliant, but what I can tell you is I had a blast watching this movie that had three people in it, basically. Willem Dafoe, Robert Pattinson, and a mermaid lady.
Mm-hmm. I gave it a 88. It's like, it's such a fucking trip,
what
man.
What the fuck,
I
think, man? Why so low?
It's 2 points.
Hark.
No, it's like, I think it's such a fucking like psychological trip. It's so hard to describe and so hard to like evaluate, but I do think it's an extremely well-made movie. And it's like you said, there's two fucking people in this entire thing, right? And I think both of them deliver like amazing, amazing performances. Pattinson fucking rules. I agree with you. He did kind of show up Dafoe a little bit, because like maybe it's because we kind of just expect from Dafoe, and like we all, at least all three of us, are very high on Pattinson, but I mean, he really fucking cut a rug in this one. I think he was awesome. I think it was very, very funny. Like, again, a lot of moments where you're laughing with the movie, not at it. There's a lot of good comedy lines. I think it's very, the production value of it is awesome. Like a lot of the more hallucinatory scenes, you like are really like feel like you're part of it, and like very much don't really understand what's happening throughout it. And I think Eggers did a good job of just, you know, kind of keeping you off your center the entire movie, which is sort of important for, I guess, what he was going for. You know, this person, Winslow, just kind of getting driven insane over the course of, what was it, like a month that they were at this lighthouse. I think he did a good job of just, like, you know, making sure you can never truly get your balance or never really get your feet underneath you, whatever. And it just, the ending's awesome. I think a lot of the scenes, like when he beats the shit out of the seagull, like you're just sitting there, you're just like, what the fuck is happening in this movie right now? As he wails the seagull up against this goddamn door. It's so funny that the speech that Dafoe gives about the lobster, like, you like me, lobster. I literally switched my fucking Twitter name for it. It's such a good speech. great fucking dialogue. And again, a lot of this dialogue is like stylized for the early 1900s, which like that is not something I would ever normally be interested in, but it's dumbed down to the point where like a fucking idiot like me can digest it. So like I enjoyed it. It still stays true to the period. It's fucking black and white, which is not something I usually enjoy either. Shout out to the artist, pile of shit. But like, I just, it is, I think, very, very well made. I think people, anyone who can get past the point that it's a black and white movie, which I think turns a lot of people off, will enjoy this movie. I think that weeds out almost anybody that wouldn't like it anyway. Like, they'll be turned off from the fact that it's black and white. Anyone that gets past that point will enjoy this movie. It's a blast, man. It's fun.
Yeah, the black and white really serves to make that setting that much more miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yes,
you feel miserable watching it because that lighthouse in environs, surrounding environs, are disgusting.
Was this like a comment on having a shitty roommate? Right? Was that like hating your roommate? Like, I know it's much deeper than that, but like that was like one of the first things I thought of. Let me read a quote from Robert Eggers here. First off, he said this to Sci-Fi Wire: people farted in the 19th century. I'm sure of it. He said, "I wanted to explore misery. I wanted to be able to laugh at misery because it's funny, frankly." And so he began very early on with fart jokes. And I hate using just that because there's much more. Just that as the crutch to say like this movie wasn't pretentiously smart, but that's a good example of it. Like it was relatable in the misery. It was relatable in how much hate was there, how much angst, right? And I think that's why, even though I still don't totally get it, like it's gone a little over my head, I still have a connection to it, and I connected to it right from the get-go.
Did you guys ever have a really shitty roommate in like college or anything?
I didn't, but like, you know enough people to have where you're like, I get that.
Did you, Trill?
No, I don't think really shitty. Did you?
I had one. My first roommate in college was a little bit of a weirdo. He really, really liked DeviantArt porn and did not have any problem about keeping it open on his computer. This is something that he really enjoyed. Like, he, very specifically, it was dragons fucking. And like some of my college friends listen to this show, you know exactly what I'm talking about. He really loved it. He was a big Steven fan. And he left. Yeah, so that actually, I do have a friend from college named Steven. That is... And he's a big listener.
What's up, Steven?
What's up, Steve?
Shout out to the never next had a suck. Shitty roommate. I liked it. I really, really, as I get older, you know, it's good to watch things where you just hate everybody in them. Because I hated both Ephraim and what was it, Wade?
Winslow and Wake.
Wake. I'm sorry. Yeah, Wake. I hated both of these guys. And that's kind of why we like Succession, because you hate everybody on Succession.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you enjoy seeing these people fucking suffer.
Yeah. Like that's that Schadenfreude of this movie, of like being in the lighthouse, like feeling like you're in there with them and seeing them just lose their minds because they both seem like miserable. Like Dirk Winslow
figure.
Yeah. Winslow basically pulls a Don Draper. Right. Mm-hmm. And it assumes this dude's name. So not a great person. And this other guy's just a, you know, fucking fake Captain Ahab.
They flip that on you too, right? Because they kind of like build up Winslow to be like the protagonist of it. And the more and more you learn about him, because like Wake's being such an asshole, you're like, wow, fuck Wake. Winslow's cool. And the more you learn about Winslow, you're like, oh, actually, Winslow's kind of an asshole too. And then Winslow obviously kills him. And you're like, I don't know who I'm supposed to like anymore.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly, what was the most memorable scene of this movie?
Him beating the shit out of the fucking seagull, really.
The seagull. Both seagull things were the things that stick in my head the most.
Yes.
Yeah, it was he wailed on that seagull for maybe 10 seconds, right?
There was nothing left of it. It was just like the fucking legs and some of the feathers were left. He just smashed that thing.
It was mist. It was the Death Stranding. It's evaporated.
Fuck, we have to make that gif like me versus my meat or something. Just smashing on this fucking seagull.
That one and the whole mermaid carving idol thing, beaten off scenes were very, very, like, the first one was weird, and then the second one was just fucked up, but fit within the tone of the movie, because at that point he had just completely lost his mind. And then they started getting out the kerosene or whatever it was,
yeah,
And that's when everything was just like, when all that water was around him and it was just flowing in and they're just, oh, it was disgusting. But it also was like, I'm glad these guys are going down. And this is very entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any takes on like what's real, what's fake? He sees visions, like the fucking face changing, the mermaid shit.
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not intelligent enough to tell you what any of that symbolism meant. All I know is my idiot baby brain was very entertained.
I saw the Greek mythology stuff too early on. Like I wish that had not been one of the first things I saw because I can't get that out of my head now. Like I don't know where to go beyond that. I know nothing about fucking Prometheus, like, in Greek mythology, but I guess like Prometheus gets his fucking innards picked apart by birds. I didn't know that. That's exactly happens at the end of the movie. I know none of that. I might be recounting that wrong, but once I saw that, I'm like, oh, I guess, well, that has to be it, right? So I don't have a thing to like latch onto here. I don't know what to make of it, but I fucking loved it because it had me just puzzled and it had me thinking. And again, as long as it's not pretentious and snobby, I'm going to be all in on something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like that. This is a movie where it's very easy for, like, I think for the possibility for it to be super pretentious was there, and I don't think it was. I think it was very non-pretentious. Very, I think, maybe self-aware isn't the word, but it was funny, and it was, like, easy to digest for a moron like me, which is, I think, a very great, like, stamp of approval for the LCB audience.
What'd you think of the length?
I think it was only like, what, 110 minutes or something?
Yeah. I thought that's length was fine.
Well, I thought going in, I thought that's a long time to just be two actors. But
which worked. I actually didn't think it was 100. I didn't realize how long it was until afterwards. It fucking flies.
Mm-hmm.
You're that so captivated by everything you do. Everything is so captivating and pulls you in. It's so A24 too.
Oh, big time A24. It's the most A24. That's literally what we said when you first saw the trailer. It's the most A24 movie of all time.
Like, you know that, like, they were in that screening room when he first showed him a cut in the movie and they just fucking stood up and were like chest bumping and shit. They're like, this is it.
Fuck yes.
This is our movie.
They'd love that shit.
I don't have much more to say on it. I wish I did. Like, I've seen it twice. I really wanted to have a zillion things to say about this movie. And like, I can compliment how it made me think to every technical aspect in the book, but I just don't have my own fucking opinion. I guess, which again makes me want to watch it again. Maybe there's something I'll pick up on. I don't know. I'll make up some bullshit fucking symbolism that I saw, I guess. But I think Eggers did a good job of just saying like, it's like, you'd want to laugh at misery there. Right. I think that is clear, and that's great.
And that's why I liked it, because I didn't expect a single funny line in this movie. I don't know why, but there were laugh out loud moments.
There were the
steak part and then the lobster part. And gosh, like, I don't know. I feel sorry for making fun of it at first, but that seems.
Oh boy, were we dead fucking wrong.
Well, I mean, but the thing was, is like, We kind of got in the reverse trap of being like, oh, that looks pretentious. we're so pretentious. You don't want to be so like, because being against pretense, like,
pessimistic
is a pretense
against it. Yeah.
Well, it's a pretense in itself, right?
Sure.
Like this inverse
double pessimist.
Yeah.
Pretentiousness, whatever.
Well, you just never want to get to this point where you're like, you're above things that like are more intelligent than a comic book movie, which I don't think we are, but like with the amount that we talk about comic book movies and stuff, just because like that's honestly what dominates the cultural landscape right now as far as movies are concerned, it's nice to be able to talk about something like this. It's nice to see something like this,
and it's fucking original, man. It's super original.
And I think that that's part of it is I saw Jojo Rabbit after this, and this was so like because this was outside of the lane of what we've been reviewing usually. And I felt like this set my expectations in terms of like, I'm on that Scorsese train now, right? I'm like all about real cinema. I'm a cinephile now. I'm above the comic book movies. And I got a taste of The Lighthouse, and I turned my nose up at anything that wasn't in black and white.
Yeah, that's
joking.
I just
please clap.
No one's clapping at you.
We can't watch Last Christmas. It's not in black and white.
It's original, man, and it's fun. What more could you possibly want?
What did the audience give it?
90. They gave it an 86.
Okay.
Lowest out of the four of them, which I was surprised by. I actually thought our audience would, though there were more votes on this than JoJo. JoJo is still not, I think, fully out. I don't work for the movie industry, so I don't know.
JoJo is something I like. Now that I think I kind of want to go back and rewatch it, because I think part of having the conversation, like, I don't know. Like I still feel fine about the score I gave it. Like I liked it, but it's something like The Lighthouse. I don't feel like I need to rewatch The Lighthouse. I feel like I got The Lighthouse, but I feel like just talking to you guys about Jojo Rabbit would be interesting. Like knowing that, just hearing perspectives outside of my own and rewatching it, seeing what was leading me. But I honestly love The Lighthouse. I never want to watch The Lighthouse again, ever. This is a movie I just don't want to see again, and that's fine.
I'm going to keep watching. I must.
The guy understand
with,
it.
The guy with Captain Marvel, except I've seen The Lighthouse 168 times. I just want a picture with Willem Dafoe.
You're just fucking up the A24 algorithm so bad. They're like, shit, now we can't make this anymore because too many people are watching it.
I just love Willem Dafoe, man.
Big fan.
He needs that Cecil B. DeMille award they give out to accomplished people at the Oscars.
Mm-hmm. The award for looking the oldest for the longest amount of time.
Looking the same fucking age.
For three years.
Bro, he fucking crushed it in Boondock Saints.
Dude, you were so good. Remember when you said there was a firefight? Oh, fucking crushed it.
Next week, so we're a little mixed up with reviews. I don't think we're going to be reviewing Midway and Dr. Sleep, folks. I'm sorry to say.
Midway. On the pod, at least.
Ford versus Ferrari. We have an interview with John Bernthal, who's in Ford versus Ferrari. It's coming out Sunday. It was an awesome interview.
Such a good interview.
He told us shit about Taylor Sheridan that I was blown away by. And it's all good stuff.
It's awesome. It's so cool.
Was he a badass looking man?
Yes.
What do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I just want to hear you guys.
He had this really cool crew neck that said Crenshaw on it.
Was he wearing a leather jacket?
No, he's just wearing like this really cool crew neck, and he also had like tattoos of shotguns and shit on him.
And he had like Punisher boots too.
Yeah, he did a Punisher boots.
Shit.
I'll say this: I thought he'd be a little taller. He's like of a height with me, which is very pleasant for me. It was a good time.
It was. Nah, it's a change of pace.
You can't be too tall, or you end up looking like Stephen Merchant in Jojo Rabbit. True. Where, like he was very funny. He's 6'3", but he looks 7'8". No, he's like 6'7", right?
I was gonna say he's actually like 6'8". Super tall.
I know.
Yeah, it's all to Joe Manganiello who fucking stood over us looking like
a beast. He fucking towered over us, dude. That was tough.
I just like you guys, it's just the Keanu meme.
Yeah, literally, yeah. Except like at least the Keanu looked like Keanu. We were just like these dumpy little like turds next to this fucking like man rocket. This guy's like one of the most attractive human beings on earth, and we're like fucking Oompa-Loompas.
I just like sometimes I wish I could have time to do these interviews because I'd just be silent for the whole interview. I'd be like, Joe, you are the bomb, and what to expect when you're expecting. Remember when you're doing the pull-ups?
Just sick, Joe. You're great.
So next week we're reviewing Ford vs. Ferrari and Charlie's Angels. This Sunday we're reviewing Dolomite Is My Name.
Great movie.
We might throw Noel in there. I don't know. We might just do a double fuck it, why not? But we are going to review Last Christmas eventually, but I think we're going to wait till more towards the Christmas season because we're going to start doing nostalgia reviews that are holiday themed. Some of those shitty new Netflix ones. We're going to dive into that. And then after that, it'll be Frozen 2 and the Mr. Rogers movie. And then after that, finally, we will review The Irishman along with Knives Out. I'm seeing The Irishman this weekend. I cannot fucking wait. Cannot wait. All right. Overrated. Let's be mean now. Let's piss people off. People, I'm sure, are going to be very angry with anything we say here.
I had to do it to them.
We have to do it to them. Top five most overrated movies of the decade. We're still going to go down and continue to do these decade things until the year wraps up. Last episode of the year, we're going to do top 10 movies of the decade. That's what we're building up to. Top five most overrated. Ken Jack. By the way, I don't know if we've ever reviewed two movies in one episode that we've given that high a score to.
That's true. We usually save it for the shitty ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Normally it's like PP the Dragon and
Fart Cops 10.
Lars Cream Puff.
I saw someone discover like Good Dinosaur on Disney Plus, by the way, and they were like gushing over it on Twitter. I'm like, oh, that's so pure.
This dinosaur is good as hell.
It's a good ass dinosaur. It's not the bad dinosaur.
Like, people love it.
Should have called it that.
Right? Ken Jack, you go first, then myself, then Trill, then the audience.
Not the mama.
Top five most overrated movies from 2000 through 2010 to 2019.
My number five is, and I think this is going to make some people's lists, it's Frozen. And I think it's a 90% critic
score.
That
is my number five as well.
It's a 90% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes. I do not think it's a 90% movie at all. I think it's a very cookie-cutter movie, like Trill always says, built to make toys or built to sell toys. There's not really a lot to it. I think there's like two good songs in it, and Moana's significantly better, and I'm pretty sure rated lower, which is bullshit.
I like Frozen. My number five as well. I like it. Let me be clear. I understand its impact. Let me be clear. Its impact was a song, though, and I love everyone involved. I love the voices. I'm not an Olaf hater, except for that fucking stupid-ass movie that came before Coco. That thing,
oh, Danny.
That thing sucked. That thing sucked. But...
Oh, thank you. Joggers. Oh, please get me the Instant Pot for my wish list. I want to put my carrot nose in it.
Oh.
Well, he's just cooking his carrot nose. That wasn't dirty.
Oh, no, man. It felt dirty.
It just is not a insanely captivating story for me. It just doesn't take me to a level where I go, this is one of the best animated movies I've seen. It's incredibly cookie cutter. Like you said, it works. It's good. Some of the music is great, but most of it comes down to just one good, very popular song.
Okay, so Frozen is on my list. So let's talk about it here since we're talking about Frozen, because okay. I don't want to repeat it. I'll just quickly mention it when it's on my list. Frozen, Let It Go isn't the best song off of Frozen. Love Is an Open Door is the best song.
I 100% agree.
Love is an Open Door is a very, very good Broadway type song. Frozen's a very, very good movie. But Frozen is... Frozen's not Moana. Moana has, in my opinion, better music all around.
Oh, my God.
And a better movie just in general.
And a better movie in general. And Frozen is very long.
Mm-hmm.
I've been watching Frozen with my daughter, who knows about five words, and one of them's Elsa. But when she says Elsa, it sounds like asshole. So it's pretty funny. She says Elsa. She loves Frozen. And I've been watching it a lot. I think Frozen's very good. I don't get the cult around it's based on how kids love it, but I don't think Let It Go is as good as people think it is. It's what the argument comes down to. The best song off of, what's the best song off of Moana?
I'd say How Far I'll Go.
Yes. So I think How Far I'll Go
is, and that's also the banner song, though.
Yeah. I mean, that How Far I Go is a fantastic Here I Am, I'm the Character, Broadway type of song.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Let It Go is good, but it's also like, I don't know how to explain it. It's just
not that good.
Well, it's just like, once you get past the Let It Go part of the song, like that's all of it right there. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear any more song. It's like, let it go, I've heard it all. It continues. Mm-hmm. Anyway, whatever. Frozen 2 in theaters.
Coming soon.
Get all your toys. You got Kristoff. You got
Elsa.
Sven.
Wear yoga pants and send them to me. Let me smell those feeties, Elsa. Elsa, what if we kissed in the ice palace? JK. Unless.
Oh, no.
You know, though, I've said it. He is going to get a romantic counterpart in Frozen 2. I just feel it.
100%.
I feel a romantic counterpart snow person coming in Frozen 2.
I 100% agree. 100%.
All right. So was Frozen both of your guys' fives?
It's my five and Ken Jack's five. What's your number five?
Interstellar.
Good pick.
Yeah. I like Interstellar. Interstellar's a mess, though. Interstellar's long. It doesn't make any sense. You get towards the end.
I think Interstellar is a movie that more people have come to say is overrated. There's still like a very hearty faction of people that think it's really, really, really good, which I just don't think is the case. But I do think that more people are coming to your side of this, though, Drill.
I think it's fine. If you like Interstellar, I almost put Inception on the list. I'm going to be honest with you. But it didn't quite make it. I do think Inception is a bit overrated. oh, get some hate for that. That's fine. Both very good movies. Interstellar, by the time I got to the end, I just didn't care. Like, once you get to the payoff of the whole, like, Matt Damon stranded, I'm going to turn on you sort of thing, I was out. I didn't need to see anything else. I didn't need to see the bookshelf wormhole or whatever. I don't care.
Yep, I would agree. It's on my list eventually. I'll give some parting shots on it, too. Because the movie, I fuck him up, King. For what it is, I'll get to it. Fuck it. All right, audience number five, Interstellar. So there was two movies out of a combined four number fives.
Cool.
Ken Jack, number four.
My number four is World War Z. It holds a very hearty 66% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes, which I still think is too high. I know that's not exactly like a super high score, but I do think that a lot of like people regard it as a good movie in general. I do not think it is a good movie. And I think I'm a little bit biased because the book is really, really good. And it's just literally nothing to do with the book whatsoever. And just like, it just took the name and did its own thing. And I think that's annoying because, again, it could have been a really good movie based off the book. But I just think it's overall sort of a CGI mess. I think there's a lot better zombie movies that came out over like the past two decades. And this one was sort of just like the death throw of the zombie genre, more or less. Like, there wasn't a lot of zombie movies that came out after this. And I don't know, because this movie, I think, commercially did pretty well. But this is just like the last one of that, like, just kind of era of like 1,000 zombie movies in a row. This is like that stamp of it where it's like, okay, now we've had too many. And then they didn't do any more after that. So I never really found it very overly entertaining. And I don't like running zombies unless it's in 28 Days Later where it's, they're not really zombies. They're more infected, whatever.
That's a fair one. In the context of why you're saying it's overrated, I get that. See, that's a movie I like, but I know you've talked about not liking that movie many times.
Not a fan. Yeah, Brad Pitt with long hair, also bad. Don't like that at all. Not one bit.
That seems like a reason enough right there. My number four is Bridesmaids.
You're definitely getting hate for that.
For sure. Bridesmaids, funny movie. I like Bridesmaids. I don't think it was worthy of the nomination that it got at the Globes.
Disagree.
You can disagree. That's why I think it's overrated. That's fair.
But I disagree. I'm not mad.
I think it's a funny movie, especially in the beginning. It gets a little dull for me throughout. It just does. I think the beginning of the movie is very funny, and things begin to stretch a bit into a sense where I'm not laughing as much out loud as I do with other comedies from this decade. I think it's not up there with the best of the decade. I think it's very funny. I like it a lot, and it's inspired a lot of other movies as well, right? Like this type of style of comedy, but it's just not my favorite. I think Bridesmaids is a little overrated before people have it.
Yeah, but people act like it's like one of the like the best comedies, like top five of the last decade. I don't think it's really there. I think it's very funny, but I also don't think it's like as funny as a lot of people do treat it.
I happen to think it is. It would be very high up on my top five list. I still think
that's fair. That's fair.
He loves the poo poo in the sewer scene.
I love that shit.
Literally.
Yeah, put it in my mouth.
Like that lady got diarrhea dumped on her yesterday.
Oh, what?
You didn't hear about that in L.A.? She got like a bucket of diarrhea dumped on her.
Oh, God, that's awful, dude. People are fucking evil.
You should have like justified murder after that. Like, you should be able to murder that person.
Ugh.
Yeah, I would agree. Okay, Trill, number four.
Number four for me. Can you guess what it is? No, you probably can't.
It'd be a lot of movies.
It'd be a lot of movies. It's The Martian.
Oh,
I like The Martian a lot.
I disagree, good sir. No,
I know.
Jesus, you and Matt Damon space movies.
It was fine. The Martian was fine.
I disagree, man.
The way people talk about The Martian, they're like, this is one of the best adventures I've ever seen.
I will say this, one of my favorites of the decade. But just like you said, I disagree. And I said fair, completely same thing here. Totally, I get it. I totally get it.
I think part of it was I read the book and I really liked the book, even though.
You did the same thing I did with World War Z. Shut up.
No, but the book's also super overrated as well.
Because
the book goes into it's a complete nerd book. It's probably like Ready Player One. It was essentially, and major props to the guy, but I think he published it. It was like a book on the internet, like a fanfic, basically. But he goes into great detail of like, well, if I mix my poop with 40 gallons of water, I can grow potatoes. And I love that shit. Like that was the draw of the book for me, like how deep he went into it. But like his character was very obnoxious. Like, be afraid, man. Like, mm-hmm. you're stranded on Mars. It's okay to be horrified. You don't have to be super cool.
Mm-hmm. I think they did that good, though, or well, though, in the movie. I enjoyed it. Again, I understand. I do get it, because people do...
You know who fucking loves The Martian?
Who's that?
Neil deGrasse Tyson. It's, like, one of the most, like, scientifically accurate space movies.
Neil deGrasse Tyson went on a bender or whatever, like, 6 months ago. I feel like I haven't heard from him much since then. A lot of bad takes.
I respect the trill. I've seen other people say the same thing. Yeah.
I don't know. People just talk, like, I liked it. The people talk about it like it was, like, fantastic.
Golden Globe, best comedy or musical winner.
Sprawling epic of a space movie. It was okay. It was just fine.
That movie ends with a David Bowie song as well. Ends with Starman.
It does. That's right.
I'm a star man. Floating in the sky. You like to come and see me because I am the Martian guy.
I think I have to end this pod with Bowie because I was about to say, if you end something with Bowie, I'm probably going to like it.
Matt Damon. He's a handsome man.
Speaking of singing, number four for the audience is A Star Is Born.
You know what? I want to agree, but a lot of people talked about A Star Is Born. Like think about just like people who aren't online, like everyday people, like the people who go to the Today Show in Times Square, not in Times Square, in Rockefeller Plaza.
Thank you.
And sit outside of the window and hold a sign that says, like, I'm Debbie from Des Moines. Like, they are like, I'm Steve from you know,
Dublin, Ohio.
Decatur. People talked about this movie like it was one of the best movies they've ever seen.
Well, again, that's so here's my thing with Interstellar. Interstellar marks are not insanely high. And this is the same thing with Avatar. I can't fucking believe it. Whatever. I'm bringing up Avatar. People are like, well, Avatar is properly rated. Blah, blah, blah. But like, there's a time where it's discussed and talked about in a way where it's fair to call it, in a sense, at times overrated. Avatar has definitely like regressed since then. So it's probably a bad example. But Interstellar is one of those, right? It is talked about in a very high sense, or it was for a while, where like, I think you can call it overrated. I think that's the same thing with A Star Is Born. Like, A Star Is Born, the marks are insanely high, but you're right, Trill. Like, it was talked about in a way and discussed in like the cultural zeitgeist in a way where, look, no matter what the marks are, no matter what the grades and ratings are, I get calling it overrated because it was talked about in a way that put it so fucking high up there with everything that I get having that viewpoint, even though I love that movie.
Yeah, but a lot of it, I think, was it also was one of those movies where it could have easily gone the other way and been awful. And so much of it was hinging on the chemistry of Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. And they did a good job. And Sam Elliott, too, like, obviously.
Oh, did a good God, job he's so good.
But like at the time, like people were talking about it, like, okay, this is, you know, like whenever something like that gets Best Picture, like I probably gave it in the 90s. Like, don't get me wrong. I thought it was great. But like, going back and thinking about it, a year later, it was good. It was great. It just the way people talked about it, I don't think it stuck around in the halls of my Hall of Fame the way it has in other people's brains.
Fair. Mm-hmm. Very fair. That's the number four for the audience. Ken Jack, you're up first for number three.
My number three is Bohemian. Rhapsody, that is. It's just, I know we hear, and I think most logical people have rated it now properly, but the fact that like it got the critical love it did at award season is, I still think, so despicably bad. Like, it is such
oh,
like,
don't worry, when Rocketman doesn't get as much praise,
oh, it's gonna be so, because Rocketman is amazing. Rocketman is real fucking blast, and like this is everything that Rocketman isn't, man. It's just such a very, very average movie in every single sense of the word. And that's not to take away from like what Rami Malek was able to do. But like, there's a point in this where, like, if you were to compare this to something like Rocketman, I really do think that Taron Egerton was able to not only just do a great actual rendition of Elton John, but he also like gave his own spin to it, blah, 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 and like obviously sang all the songs. And I don't put it against Rami Malek not being able to sing Freddie Mercury, because that's obviously an impossible task, but like, I'm not giving him extra points for not being able to sing it. And I also still think it felt like watching it more like he was doing in an, he was like a street performer doing an impression of Freddie Mercury, which, like, again, it wasn't bad, but I still don't think it was worthy of best actor noms. I don't really think it was worth any of the editing nominations, any of the most of the music things. Cause, like, the Live Aid scene was sick. Like, no one's debating that. But I do think that, like, this got so much critical love that it really and truly did not deserve whatsoever.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I just
spot on.
I'm still in disbelief with how far it went in the awards season.
Really fucking deep, dude.
Well, I mean, not only deep, like deep would have been, like, for me to say deep, like, it did go deep, but not just deep. Like, it won the Best Actor Award.
Won 8 fucking Oscars or something,
it
right?
It was nominated for Best Picture. And I know we're nominating 25 movies now, but it shouldn't have been up there.
I mean, Green Book shouldn't have had the wins it had either. But, I mean, at the same time, like, it won, I think, 8, right, total?
It won a lot.
It won 4.
Won 4, maybe 1-4, nominated for 8 or something. But, like, and it won Best Editing, which I feel like we've seen the clip 1,000 times of the scene.
Well, where that was, like, a fucking joke. That was – Twitter was hilarious when it won editing.
That was hilariously just – and again, like, despicably bad when you consider, like, we literally just talked about it. It's a fucking miracle how, like, any movie gets made. And the fact that there were, like directors and cinematographers out there, there were, like, Alfonso Cuarón, who was able to make, like, Roma, which is something that's so beautifully fucking edited, and this fucking hunk of shit wins Best Editing. Like, that is despicable. And that is, I mean, I have to throw it on overrated just for that alone.
Super, super fair. My number 3 is The Revenant. The Revenant, another one, I think, is good. I think got a little too much praise. I don't think this holds a candle to Birdman, which is what Alejandro Giannarrito had done the year before or the year before that. I think it was the year before that. I forget what year Birdman came out. I think Birdman came out 2014. I think this movie is incredibly well made, technically speaking. I think it's a bit of a slog for me at times. It's a little bit of a bore. I think this movie gets pushed up a bit because of Leo. I don't think it was Leo's best role. I think it was like a make good Oscar. Tom Hardy pretty good in it. But The Revenant, besides the technical elements, just never did it for me. And I think even where it's marked now is a little overrated, even though I do respect what this movie is and do give it good marks. But I just don't think it's great. It was at one point almost the best picture winner. I think Spotlight had won that year, which very well deserved. I just don't think The Revenant is all that amazing. I think in terms of what Giannarrito has done, Birdman blows it out of the fucking water.
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait to talk about Birdman later on before we wrap up these decade lists, by the way. It will be up there.
It's your number one most overrated.
What, Birdman?
No, I'm just messing with him. I'm yanking your chain.
Speaking of being pretentious, you mean Birdman and The Unfortunate Virtue of Ignorance? Is that
and
right?
And The Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
Something like that. Trill, number 3.
My number 3 is Avengers Endgame.
Oh, fair.
Infinity War is better.
See, I agree with you. I do think Infinity War is better than Endgame.
But nobody ever talks about Infinity War anymore, I feel like.
No, I think that's become a bit of a, I don't know, maybe because I'm just so into that zone. I've seen people have that take.
No, they don't. Just so my argument I just made holds, they don't.
No, it's not a popular take.
Nobody ever says that.
You're for sure. You're for sure in a minority there with that take. So, yes. Sorry, carry on.
I think, yeah, like I just, the only reason I'm picking this is Endgame, obviously, the highest grossing movie of all time. Very hyped up. But pound for pound, I thought Infinity War, just by virtue of being first in terms of the spectacle, thought it did better, and I liked it more. But I feel like people have forgotten about Infinity War, which that may just be me not being in the conversation, Jeff, like you're saying.
No, I think that is fair. I think it definitely got pushed down a bit. And Infinity War, they're 1A, 1B with the MCU for two very different reasons. The emotional stuff with the heroes and the second one. First one had more Thanos.
That's yeah, and to that, Mr. Scorsese, I say, we killed all the characters.
Hmm.
What could you want?
Shit, it, pal.
Is Jimmy Hoffa going to snap everyone to death in Irishman?
Well, if you're saying this isn't cinema, then I have two words for you, baby. Marty. Fat Thor.
Let me tell you about Jimmy Hoffa. He's no Kemba Walker, pal.
Number 3 for the audience. I thought this would be number 1. It is not. So this is the one I thought would be number 1. What do you think it is?
Avatar.
Avatar came out in 2009.
Yeah. Fuck. I don't know. Maybe it would be. What did I just pick? Bohemian?
No.
That's Shape of Water.
No, Shape of Water, not top five. Mad Max Fury Road. Mad Max is a popular, overrated pick. That's number three for the audience.
I don't like that.
I don't want to like it, but the problem with all these movies, and like a movie like Mad Max, and I think John Wick gets it too, is it just it gets overhyped. And I don't know. It's like it gets to a point where it gets put up on a pedestal. You know,
it's all opinion. Like, I put it on a pedestal, and I put it on a pedestal very confidently for my opinion. Like, I don't think it's overhyped. I think it's perfectly hyped. But with that said, I know what you're saying. Again, yeah, it's the same reason why I say my thing about Interstellar, or why you or I can see eye to eye with why A Star Is Born is on their list, right? Like, it's the same reasoning.
Well, I think it's just like, if you weren't as high on it, hearing people who are super high on it over and over and over tell you it how good it was probably makes you want to go the other way. I think that's just human nature to want to be a contrarian in some respects. And I'm not saying this is why they put it on the list, but I can certainly understand, like, the people talk about Mad Max Fury Road sometimes like it was more than what it actually was, which is fucking awesome action.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, I also think it's just like a, and as far as an artistic sense, like, beautifully made movie.
Yeah, I mean, and that's true.
I mean, you'll hear me talk about it again here towards the end of the fucking end of the year when we do our list. I think it's, you know, not just, I mean, amazing action and also just gorgeously shot. It's incredible. But I do get it. You're right, because it is hyped up in a crazy way, and it also was an effect. I'm gonna call it the Slumdog Millionaire effect. I know there's other movies that people use when they say this. It's a movie that I think a lot of people saw towards award season or after award season, at least the mainstream crowd. And so they had heard the hype, and then they saw it. And no matter what, it's one thing to hear pre-release hype, but another thing to watch a movie after hype of during release and after release.
can you read what I just typed to the group?
Sure. He said, "Fat slacks, heavy chode." Extremely Mad Max voice.
That's bait.
That's bite.
Fat slacks. How long had that been in your head?
I don't know.
Number two. Birds of Spies. It's a 91% on Rotten Tomatoes. It is so mid.
I fucked up. That should have been on my list. God damn it.
It is so mid. So mid tiers as far as spy movies go. It is so slow and boring. It's never really particularly intriguing at any point. It is like the most old man porn movie ever made, and I really and truly do not believe it deserved any of the Oscar love it got. And like what Mark Rylance, I think, won for his best supporting for that.
He was good, but I know what you're getting at. What it's remembered for.
Yeah, it's just, I think it was. That was the Rocky year. There were the Creed year, right? Where Stallone should have won.
It's remembered for one of the most unfortunate, disappointing cock blocks in Oscar history, because everyone was ready to go. They had fucking Gun of Fly Now queued up, him to walk on stage, accept his Oscar, and all we ended up getting was
this old bastard coming up for this. Like, again, like a solid performance, best supporting actor. Sure not, pal. Like, absolutely not. Did it deserve any of this Oscar? It is so painfully average of a spy movie. And like, this is supposed to be like one of the, like, as far as like the subject material goes, like, it's a pretty fucking intriguing story, and it is such a boring movie to me, like, and painfully boring. 91%. 91. That is so high.
Now, it wasn't, I don't think it was Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy boring, but I found it fairly boring. That was a movie. Talk about disappointing with Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. But I agree. That probably should have been on my list. That probably should have been on mine. My number two, though, is Gravity. Gravity, a movie that...
I like Gravity.
Well, I mean, that's fair, but that's why it's overrated, because I know a lot of people like it. Gravity is a spectacle. It's a good movie. I don't think it's as amazing as people make it out to be. It's sound, visuals, insane. It's creepy, all that shit. Didn't work for me. I was bored by the movie. for a lot of it, and I think part of it is I'm just not a big Sandra Bullock fan. I've said it before. I bet I'd be great friends with Sandra Bullock, but her acting, I never see past it just being Sandra Bullock. That is the big hang up for me.
So for this movie, I think I'm not a big Sandra Bullock fan either, like at all. And I think the fact that I like this movie so much in spite of that is a testament to how good I think it actually is. So like that's for me like kind of like a point like that makes it more endearing for me.
Yeah, I liked it. I do think it's probably on a lot of people's overrated list though, because I do remember it being somewhat polarizing. But I do remember there being a lot of dissenting voices saying it's basically very boring, even at the time.
Yeah. I think it was a fucking thrill ride. I think it was awesome. And again, the fact that this centered around an actress that I don't particularly care for and like almost entire, like literally solely focusing on her and me enjoying it still anyway, I think that means it's pretty fucking good, at least for my standards. Again, it's very personal, obviously. It's subjective.
I'll save. I do have extra thoughts, but I'll save. If that's a bit of a hint. Gravity, I respect everything that it is. I never connected with it. Just never did. Number two, Trill.
Frozen. It's Frozen.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I figured.
Let it go.
I thought it'd be number one, but okay. Yep.
No, my number one is going to melt some faces off. It's probably the hottest take I've ever unleashed upon this podcast.
All right, we'll save it. Number two for the audience. Well,
I know you need to save it because it's number one.
Well, I know. I thought you were maybe giving some hints out.
There's more to come from the trailer.
Yeah, I thought you were going to give some hints out.
No, but I'm just saying, like the it's implied we're going to save it because we're not to number one. Oh,
okay. audience number two. This was very surprising. And I actually double checked that we weren't spam voted on this. Number two most overrated movie of the decade from the audience, Deadpool.
Okay, no, that's fair.
That one didn't surprise you? That one shocked me.
I know. A lot of people do think that it's like overhyped up by like the people, you know, like the kind of people that usually do like Deadpool. You know what I mean? Like the Deadpool stands, like people who wear Deadpool merch and shit. Like,
Who's got two thumbs and is offensive.
Yep.
And likes chimichangas.
You're looking at him. I think a lot of people, like average moviegoers, do think that they're the people that make it like sound like it's one of the better movies of the last decade or whatever, or the best comic movies of all time. Like some people have said, not me, but a lot of people do say this. So I understand the sort of counter movement against, but I get it.
Ken Deck, what's your number one most overrated movie of the decade?
My number one, Jurassic World. And that is because I'm calling it overrated because, and you got to hear it out. Okay. It is a top 10 grossing movie of all time.
Okay.
And I think it's number five, actually. So technically top five. And it's a 72% on Rotten Critic score. Audience score is even higher. And I think it is by far, out of all the movies in the top grossing list, it is the most forgettable by far. By like a huge margin. There is literally nothing special about the movie whatsoever. You can't remember any of the characters' names. You can barely remember what happened in it. It is utterly forgettable. And again, it is a top five grossing movie of all time.
Yeah. I would argue it is rated that way, though. I think it's rated very
72
mediocre.
Is pretty high. I would say.
Yeah.
But I did come out of it thinking
that
it was better than Jurassic Park.
That's what I'm saying.
I forgot about that. I will say this for being a part of the crowd, though I have admittedly had a come to Jesus / James Cameron meeting with myself. I've softened the Avatar takes because I'm now like looking forward to the sequels. James Cameron has that hypnotist whatever on us. But I think Jurassic World is far more forgettable than Avatar.
Significantly
far,
more.
Far, far more forgettable than Avatar.
Oh, for sure.
Without even like batting an eye, like in terms of how we treat Avatar, so unfair compared to how we treat Jurassic. Because Jurassic World is disgustingly forgettable. I'm not calling it overrated, but yeah.
The only things I remember from Jurassic World is him standing around the raptors with his hands up.
With his hands up, that's it, man. What was that character's name?
The assistant Owen. The assistant.
We know it's not because we said it so many
now
times.
Now we know it. We've said it so many fucking times we know their name, but that's the only reason why.
The assistant getting eaten very cruelly, I might add, and unnecessarily towards the plot by the water
the pterodactyl thing. Oh, wait, no, the pterodactyl picked her up and then dropped her into the Manosaurus's mouth or whatever.
Yeah, the big water dinosaur probably didn't exist. And probably did, I don't know. And then the Jimmy Fallon balls.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
The Jimmy Fallon balls.
And then the Margaritaville.
Jimmy Buffett has about to say Margaritaville. Yeah. That's the best part of the whole thing, him getting a little cameo. He's running away with those drinks.
And them getting over their parents' divorce really quickly.
Yeah. Oh, don't get me. I think our fan base is so sick of me talking about how they never wrap up that divorce line.
What's the deal with that storyline?
Well, what was Bryce Dallas Howard's character's name?
Claire.
Yep.
But that's, again, that's not fair because we've talked about this so many times.
All right, what was Vincent D'Onofrio's character's name?
That I don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
It was Vic Hoskins. You might have just edited the Rotten Tomatoes page for all I know. Whatever.
It's true. It is utterly forgettable. It's a top five grossing fucking movie, man. It's crazy.
There is no, but it was because of nostalgia. Like, I get why it made so much. Like, I do get it. It makes sense. But Jake Johnson's character was named Lowry Cruthers. Not a chance. No way.
Fake pal.
That's not real. Okay. Number one most overrated movie for me. I already teased it. I think it's Interstellar. I guess I just said that about Jurassic World. But Jurassic World is I do feel like Interstellar people may have come down a little bit on it, but I'm going to hold my take steady here. 85 approval on audience for Rotten Tomatoes, 72 critics. I guess I always think it's higher for critics. So I guess I'm kind of in the same boat with you there. I might be a bit unfair here with saying it, but I just feel like in terms of other Nolan movies and how it's always referenced, we talk about space or crazy shit or time and all that. Like, I just don't think it's – because, like, for me, I love Inception Trill. Like, I love Inception. I think it's a genius-level movie on so many ways. And in terms of Nolan's best, I think Interstellar is so far down the list. Like, when we talk Nolan, I don't even think about fucking Interstellar. I think about that. I think it's an overrated movie. When it came out, people were all blown away by it. It just didn't do it for me. So Interstellar's up there, number one. Trill, melt the brains away. What's your number one most overrated movie of the decade?
Drive.
Ooh. Wow, okay. All right, that was actually the audience's number. Wow, I can't talk. The audience's number six was Drive.
Oh, so it's, maybe it's that not that hot of a take. But I Drive is good. I see nothing but near universal acclaim for it. People talk about it. They love it. I feel like it's overrated. This is the hottest take I've had.
I will say this.
It's overrated because people fucking love the jacket he's wearing.
It's a good jacket. Okay. It's a hot jacket.
Yeah.
I there's something about Gosling in this movie wearing that jacket, driving that car, that I think is very attractive in terms of people rating this movie as highly as they do. It is a good movie, but it is not as good.
This is why, I know we use Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic and all that shit as a barometer for these when we do these under and overrated. This is why I think those scores are tough because it's at a 79% of Rotten Tomatoes, but I think a lot of people talk about it like it's a much higher approval. When I did my video for our YouTube channel with underappreciated movies of the decade, a lot of replies I got on Twitter were Drive for underappreciated.
I gotta go get that Scorpion jacket.
It's a hot jacket, man.
It's a hot jacket.
I had a friend go that for Halloween like 3 years in a row.
So I think that this movie, and I don't know if you guys would agree with me on this, I think as a movie critic poser that I am, I think that a lot of people that like to think they're smart about movies say that this movie is very, very, very good. Like, oh, you got to see Drive. You got to see Drive. I think a lot of people that are like that praise this movie like it's the best movie ever. And I think a lot of actual movie critics are like, yeah, this is a good movie.
For some reason, whenever I think about Drive, I think about Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler is better.
Nightcrawler is one of the most underrated, underappreciated movies.
I don't know why I think about Nightcrawler. Maybe because it was the same time. And it's just, I put Jake Gyllenhaal and Ryan Gosling in the same cohort of actors who became popular around the same time and are probably hot. Around the same age. Yeah, in our attractive.
Hot as fuck.
Hot Ben.
Oh, Jake. Crawling my pussy.
Okay, I'm up here. So what do you want me to do?
I didn't mean it literally.
Drive. It's good. Yeah, but people love this movie. I don't get it.
I think it's good.
It's a good movie. I
like Drive. But I do get what you're saying. Again, that's been the basis for almost all of our picks, right?
Yeah.
Like sometimes it's more than just like the ratings. It's about how it's discussed, you know, our overall sentiment. By the way, Jake Gyllenhaal, I'm always going to mention. You can't bring up Nightcrawler without me mentioning that he was just robbed of a nomination for
big
the
time.
Oscars.
Big time robbed.
That was the year that Eddie Redmayne won for The Theory of Everything, which he was good as Stephen Hawking, but it just makes me the key ton, if it's Michael Keaton not winning for Birdman that year, will always make me angry. And then on top of that, Jake Gyllenhaal just not getting a nomination for Nightcrawler.
Mm-hmm.
It was shouldn't have broken Taylor's heart.
It's true.
It's true.
Yeah. Audience number one. Here are the ones that are not on their list. Okay. Lady Bird was just off the list. Drive, Coco, Birdman, Argo. Number one most overrated movie. One of us already had it.
One of us already had it. Bohemian.
Nope.
Avengers Endgame.
Nope.
Bridge of Spies.
Nope.
Frozen.
Nope. One more guess.
Bridesmaids.
Now, Gravity.
I figured it'd be a list.
Gravity.
Another guy who broke Taylor's heart.
Things just off my list: Wolf of Wall Street, Darkest Hour. Darkest Hour, but that's so fucking bored of that movie. That's really it. Not easy.
Definitely not.
No, these are tough. People are going to be pissed. That's why I'm not going to tag us in the graphic. I don't want to see the tweets tomorrow.
No,
make sure to subscribe
not.
To our YouTube channel, by the way. Please, please do it and help us out. We're trying to build that channel up. YouTube, building up YouTube is very hard. I think those recap videos are going to be helpful if you want to watch these shows, Mandalorian, not just Mandalorian, but also Watchmen, and then other things that come out, the Marvel shows. When Succession comes back, we'll do that. So
Pixar in real life.
Yeah, Pixar in real life. Anything else?
No, the part of the episode I really liked is when they're in Washington Square Park and the young man pressed the happy button on the console. Like, what did you think in terms of the emotional cues that scene gave off?
What was the pathos there?
No, nothing else.
I didn't hit. Good.
That's okay. I'll just end with a classic. I'm flatlining.
That's it. Make sure to watch Dolomite Is My Name. That is a movie we are reviewing this Sunday. Then we're going to start diving into holiday movies. We're going to be interviewing John Bernthal. Ken Jack, Joe Ballins, I'm Jeff Lowe. We will talk to you on Sunday.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.